Israel stops its current conduct in Gaza. And I use the word reporting because the responses are very different in both tone and content. There are claims that it represents a reward for Hamas. There are predictable criticisms coming in from Israel. And there are corners of the UK media that see this as a cause for optimism, if not celebration. I'm interested in why you think he's done it and what it might actually mean.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, multiple countries are braced for tsunami waves after a massive earthquake off the east coast of Russia. Evacuation warnings are in place across the Pacific region after the 8.8 magnitude tremor struck early this morning. They cover parts of the US, Japan and countries including the Philippines. Meteorologist Jim Dale says it could take some time to develop.
Because the Pacific is so big, we've got to be looking at the United States, obviously Japan very close, Russia itself, eastern Russia, and there'll be other places. So, as I say, this is unfolding. We'll see how it goes. These things just happen. They're instantaneous. Very little warning.
You can follow live developments on the LBC app. Ministers have rejected claims by Israel that Britain is rewarding Hamas by moving towards recognising a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer has promised the UK will do that by September, unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. He's also reiterated his call for Hamas to disarm and release remaining hostages. The Shadow Foreign Secretary, Dame Priti Patel, has told LBC that Sir Keir is just trying to appease his backbenchers.
This situation is taking place because of Hamas and October the 7th. Hamas is a terrorist organisation that basically is running amok in Gaza, that is inflicting pain on the people of Gaza. And what's Britain's response? Britain's response basically is to say, let's recognise Palestine rather than enter a formal peace process.
Police say a 14-year-old boy remains in a critical condition after a stabbing in East London. Five boys have been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder over the attack in East Ham on Saturday. Jeffrey Epstein's brother has branded President Trump a liar for playing down his relationship with the late paedophile financier. Mr. Trump is under growing pressure over reports his name appears in files related to Epstein, documents he'd previously promised to release. The White House says that's fake news. Mark Epstein, who's been speaking to our sister station, LBC News, says it's the mark of a desperate person.
I understand a lot of people distancing himself from Jeffrey. He was charged, you know, crimes that people don't want to be associated with. And I understand that, you know, but the lies, you know, that's a little bit much, especially when they're so provable that they're lies. It becomes laughable.
Bayern Munich have signed Luis Diaz from Liverpool in a deal worth £65.5 million. The Colombia international was given permission to leave the Premier League Champions pre-season tour of Asia on Monday. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 20 points at 91.15. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 50. LBC weather, most places dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's always, what's the word we want? Educative, isn't it? To listen to Priti Patel, Dame Priti Patel, opining on matters Middle Eastern without reminding us of the time she was fired or forced to resign as Secretary of State for International Development after misleading the public about undisclosed meetings with Israeli officials in secrecy. And it is to domestic politics, as opposed to international, that I want to turn your attention first this morning, or at least looking at matters international through the lens of domestic politics. Keir Starmer has made a move that will, I don't know, it's hard to tell, isn't it, satisfy few, I think, because most people will think that he has either gone too far or not gone far enough. That is the curse, isn't it, in a sense, of the centrist. He's gone too far. No, he hasn't. He hasn't gone far enough. Do you know, that happens to me sometimes. I sit down as we prepare to tackle a particularly tricky subject together, and something occurs to me in the opening moments of my, what was it called the other day? Big pile of waffle. That hadn't occurred to me before. I mean, how do you find the people that think Keir Starmer's getting it about right? Well, I will find you today. You can call me on 03456060973. But I think you can probably divide early reaction into he has gone too far or he has not gone enough. If you're not across the story, the details are as follows. The UK will formally recognise the state of Palestine. Problem one, nobody is entirely clear about precisely what that means. That, of course, may not be the point. Formally recognise the state of Palestine in September as a result of the, to quote the UK government, increasingly intolerable situation on the ground in Gaza. In order to prevent the recognition of the state of Palestine, Israel must abide by a ceasefire and commit to a two-state solution in the Middle East. Already, four, five, six questions are presenting themselves, not least whether or not the leverage that Starmer seeks to exert has any prospect whatsoever of succeeding. He recalled his cabinet from their summer break to approve this plan after meeting with Donald Trump up in Scotland. And the cabinet has agreed on this proposal, with the UK now set to follow France in acknowledging statehood. I mean, one obvious question as well is how on earth would, what possible prospect is there of this actually succeeding, of Benjamin Netanyahu waking up this morning and going, do you know what, old Starmer's got a point, actually. Let's call a ceasefire, return to our commitment to the two-state solution, and hopefully avoid the UK government's mooted recognition of the state of Palestine. But I want you to tell me why you think he's done it. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Words are horribly inadequate in the context of this conversation. I don't know what words would fit, but I know the words I have don't. You've got the word proportionate, and of course it's corollary, disproportionate. You've got the word sustainable, and its corollary, unsustainable. And there are people in the United Kingdom who divide pretty neatly along both of those lines, that Israel's actions in Gaza became disproportionate a long time ago, and people persuaded that Israel's actions in Gaza remain proportionate, similarly with sustainability. And Keir Starmer's job is to govern the United Kingdom. He has, I think, like all the best world leaders, a proper interest in international relations, but his job is to govern the United Kingdom, and sometimes to use his position governing the United Kingdom to pursue the greater good. Already, you could be forgiven for thinking that what he's done here has more to do with internal party politics or internal domestic UK politics than it does with anything that's going on in the ground in the Middle East, and you may well be right, which is why the question I'm asking is, why do you think he has done it, and what does it actually mean? What does it actually mean, either objectively or intellectually, or perhaps even more interestingly today, what does it mean to you? What does it mean to you that the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is, well, I mean, is it threatening? Because threatening's another weird word in this kind of context, isn't it? Threatening to recognise the Palestinian state, as if that is something with which you punish Israel. In fact, I'm not sure you can challenge that analysis. The recognition of the Palestinian state in this context, despite it being a goal of previous Israeli administrations, a cherished goal of some previous Israeli prime ministers, Keir Starmer, the world has turned to such a degree that Keir Starmer now cites the recognition of a Palestinian state as a punishment for the current government of Israel. I don't know quite how that plays into broader trends of opinion and trends of thought, but unless you correct me pretty quickly, I don't know that using the word threatening is in any way controversial. Keir Starmer is threatening to formally recognise the state of Palestine unless the Israeli administration does what he wants them to do. And what he wants them to do is to stop the offensives in Gaza, to stop killing Palestinian people in Gaza. And then you've got the question of why you think he's done it, which leads us into probably slightly choppier territory. Has he done it with any realistic hope of his ultimatum being observed? Have a little think about that. It's an important question. What is the likelihood of this making any difference whatsoever to Benjamin Netanyahu's current trajectory? I would very sadly answer personally to that. No. No idea whatsoever. No chance whatsoever, forgive me. I can't quite see how there is a universe in which Benjamin Netanyahu responds to Keir Starmer's ultimatum, or indeed Emmanuel Macron's ultimatum, by going, okay, yeah, right, massive change, of course. Let's stop it now, and I will face the consequences of losing the support of the far-right members of my own cabinet. I will face the consequences of a public opinion in Israel, whatever it may be. I will do what Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron have ordered me to do, whatever the consequences will be. I'll throw in another factor for you, which would be the absence of Donald Trump's support from this position. And irredeemable wombat that Donald Trump may be, he is still the President of the United States of America, and the office, whoever holds it, carries enormous weight. Nowhere more so than in the Middle East, and nowhere more so than in relations between Israel and the Palestinian people. Without his support for any position, for any ultimatum, for any attempt to exercise leverage, without the support of the United States of America, I suspect that the call is relatively pointless. In which case, why do you think Starmer has done it? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. I should also tell you, because it's on the front page of the same newspaper from which I am filling you in on the roadmap for peace that Keir Starmer endorsed yesterday, that there is a large group of high-profile Israeli public figures, including academics, artists, and public intellectuals, calling for, I quote, crippling sanctions, end quotes, to be imposed by the international community on Israel. 31 signatories, including Yuval Abraham. There's a former Israeli attorney general called Michael Ben-Yair, Avraham Berg, a former speaker of Israel's parliament, a former head of the Jewish Agency, several recipients of the prestigious Israel Prize, which is the highest cultural honour that Israel can bestow. And they write of the starving the people of Gaza to death and contemplating the forced removal of millions of Palestinians from the Strip, and add the international community must impose crippling sanctions on Israel until it ends this brutal campaign and implements a permanent ceasefire. So then you have an even more complicated element of this conversation. Incredibly patriotic and passionate Israelis who don't think that what Keir Starmer has done goes anywhere near far enough. I think it would be a little bit glib to pursue the notion of who on earth he has made happy with this claim, but I think the argument that has been popularised on some right-wing newspaper front pages today, that it is designed to placate Hamas, falls apart when you look at the list of prominent Israeli public figures, including academics and public intellectuals, who haven't directly criticised what Keir Starmer has done, but who, when you read between the lines of the letter that they've sent to The Guardian this morning, you realise they don't believe that he, or indeed anybody in the international community, has gone far enough. I sat down with the Foreign Secretary last week, with David Lammy, and Eleanor, the producer, and I are a bit at odds over whether or not he would have known when he sat down that they were poised to make this announcement yesterday. I lean towards the idea that I missed a massive scoop normally, and that if I'd been on my toes a little bit more, I'd have been able to sense that something was in the wind in this area, and the Foreign Secretary had let it slip. And yet, there's also the possibility that the letter submitted to the Prime Minister by a host of MPs, not just from his own party. How many parties do you think 221 MPs who wrote to the Prime Minister and indeed the Foreign Secretary last week urging them to recognise Palestine as a state came from? I don't know that anybody would get this right. How many parties? So 221 MPs sent a joint letter to the Prime Minister and Foreign Secretary urging them to recognise Palestine as a state now. How many parties do you think those MPs came from? No? Nine. I don't think, without checking my notes, I don't think I'd be able to name all nine parties. But it gives you an idea of the plurality of opinion on this. It also reminds us of the role of the Balfour Declaration and the former mandatory power in Palestine, and the fact that the United Kingdom has backed a two-state solution since 1980, at least. At such a recognition, they wrote, would give that position substance, as well as living up to a historic responsibility we have to people under the mandate. So you need a little bit of history as well to comment on some of this, and proper history, as in understanding what things are designed to do and what they actually end up doing. I might do a hook and tease on that, on what the nine parties actually are, because it is a genuinely, well, an incredibly diverse selection of parliamentarians. So, I also want to ask you how big a deal you think it is, because that allows people who perhaps don't have a lot of skin in the game, for want of a better phrase, to observe, if you like, and to comment, to contemplate the question of why this has happened. How big a deal is it? And that is a question that opens up two doors. There's the question of how big a deal it is domestically and how big a deal it is internationally. Internationally, and listen, I'm just one person with one set of opinions, unless you can persuade me otherwise, I don't think this is a very big moment internationally. In the context of it curtailing the carnage in Gaza, I think it might end up being meaningless. Knowing what we know about Benjamin Netanyahu's desperation to cling to power and the means by which he can do so, I can't quite see how this will change anything. Domestically, it seems to me to be, largely because it won't change anything internationally, unlikely to placate the people who feel that he should have gone much further, much faster, but can't generally tell you what that would look like. Until, of course, you remind yourself of what this panoply of highly prominent Israeli public figures have said today, and they have said that they should be, the whole international community should be imposing, quotes, crippling sanctions, end quotes, on their own country, on their country, in order to stop the mounting horror unfolding in Gaza, most recently and most obviously in the context of starvation. So how big a deal is it, and why do you think he's done it? Hit the numbers now. You will get through, okay? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And I don't think, For what it's worth, I don't think anybody sensible or honest would be pursuing the idea that this is somehow rewarding Hamas. I hate to say this, but I think that Hamas and the, if you can call it an ideology that drives it, is so ineffably warped that the carnage is a bigger PR win for them than a ceasefire would be. I could be wrong, and I'll take advisement on that as well. But in the first instance, these are the questions, okay? Why do you think Keir Starmer has done this now? 0345 6060 973. And what does it mean? How big a deal is it? What is it likely to achieve? Your answer to that set of three questions may well be exactly the same in each case. It's 10:18.
LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play!
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Train to Pevensey Bay. Beach, mates, cooler. Oh,
Danny, you got the hummus, yeah?
Of course.
Now this is what it's all about. Time to relax.
Huh? Frisbee? No, you two crack on.
Just made the train. Now home to over half the beach from my bag. 10 out of 10 day, though.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 20 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the story is enormous. UK to recognise state of Palestine unless Israel commits to ceasefire. But the ramifications, the repercussions are somewhat harder to quantify. What does this mean? Why has Keir Starmer done it? And what, if anything, is it likely to achieve? And maybe that's not the point. You know, it's a terrible thing to say, but sometimes tone and presentation carry a weight that goes beyond impact and consequence. It could be that this changes the lie of the land for future conversations. But anyway, I've told you what I think. I want to find out what you think. Philo is in Shaftesbury in Dorset. Philo, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello.
I think the reason Keir Starmer's done it, put bluntly, at the present time is pressure. Not just from his middle-ranking backbenchers or centrist backbenchers, but also the sort of barely concealed fury in the British public about what's actually happening in Gaza.
Why could he not be part of the phenomenon that you describe? If the British public has felt its feelings increase on this front, and I think that's a matter of counting, not a matter of opinion. Why does Keir Starmer have to be separate from that? Why couldn't he also have felt his position change as the facts on the ground have changed?
Because I think he tends to be behind the ball a lot of the time. He's got to manage the orange maniac, hasn't he?
Keith just pointed out that he made the announcement pretty much as the plane door shut.
Yeah, he did.
On Air Force One. Do you think that's relevant?
No, I think he will obviously...
How rude. Sorry, Keith. That wasn't fair. I thought it was much more interesting than Philo allowed.
He will obviously have told Trump what he's planning to do.
Yes, of course he would.
But I think it's symbolic because Britain now is not the nation it used to be, not least when it was part of the 1917 Balfour Declaration. We don't have the clout, but we've got France, who's already said that they're going to recognise the Palestinian state. And the more European voices that do that, the louder the call will come.
Do you think so? You mean the strength in numbers argument,
without... It will increase the volume.
Yeah.
It will increase, without bringing up the dreaded Brexit, it will increase the volume of saying...
I'm afraid we're losing the phone line, Philo, which is a shame because I would be interested in hearing more of what you have to say and whether you were able to help or not, nudging you also towards the question of what it actually means. I don't mean for my, perennial coma patient, a person who's been asleep for 10 years and just woke up this morning and we sometimes set ourselves the task of explaining a big story in the news to them. I mean for people who have actually been paying varying degrees of attention, who do have varying degrees of understanding of what has gone on. How does this change things? What does this change? This declaration, which I think most people would agree, seems unlikely to affect a meaningful transformation in Israeli policy. But what does this change actually mean? I think we've got Philo back. So, Toby in Bristol, as you were, I'll give Philo's phone line one more go. What does it change, do you think?
Well, it doesn't. It's largely symbolic at the moment. I think what it does do, because Trump, for whatever reason, he's wedded to Israel, but we know he's desperate for a Nobel Peace Prize. I wonder whether what Keir Starmer's been doing is saying, why don't you, to Trump, work behind the scenes, because you're the only person that Netanyahu's going to listen to, to make him let the aid in and make him agree a ceasefire. And then, your Nobel Peace Prize will be
And Netanyahu's career will be over, and quite possibly his liberty will be over as well. So, I mean, you might be right. It is one of those Russian dolls, isn't it, that you open one Russian doll of confusion and there's another one inside. Thank you. The notion of what it changes being nothing is immediately seductive. And yet, if it really changed nothing, the question of why he's done it becomes more interesting. Simply bowing to pressure from not just his own MPs, but a dizzying array of MPs from nine different parties. Deadly serious, though, this subject matter is, I probably would give some sort of prize to someone who could name all nine parties without looking anything up, from which the 221 MPs who wrote to the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary last week calling for precisely what happened yesterday to happen come from. Philo, take care. Toby's in Bristol. Toby, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I think it has a lot to do with what's happening within his own party as well as internationally. I think it's no coincidence with Corbyn setting up his own party and a huge amount of interest, not members yet, but 600,000. And I'm not a Corbyn supporter. He had his chance and completely, sold the country down the river with Johnson. But
What are the people that thought his determination to keep Labour out of power had peaked under his own leadership, and how wrong that constituency of people proved to be?
Yeah, and back he comes. I mean, he'll be 80 by 2029. My goodness me. But I think there's that combination of he's trying to signal to people that he wants to do something. But if he really wanted to do something, what we saw happen with Ukraine and sanctions, financial sanctions happening through the EU.
Yeah, not independently, though. He can't do any of that. And this ties in a little bit with what Philo was saying about our declined still declining status. I the notion that he could adopt some sort of leadership role that Boris Johnson, of course, pretended to adopt and succeeded in winning a PR attempt to provide a leadership role. In terms of what can actually be done logistically, he didn't, did he?
No, and I think that's why it is more indicative towards people, because they're hemorrhaging people to not only the potential new party, but also to the Greens, to the possibly the Lib Dems, and he's sort of looking forward. And this sort of thing festers, and it really is going to cause him problems if he doesn't sort of to show some sort of action, even if it's just perfunctory. Why he's done it.
I mean, this is the problem that he has, actually, isn't it? That we have become very used in recent years, possibly with the exception of Rishi Sunak, to slightly bonkers leadership, slightly unhinged leadership, certainly since 2019. And he is the opposite of that. Whether he's any good or not, it's still in the lap of the gods. But what he's not going to do is something that might provide a short-term PR boost. He is going to be more likely to be agitating behind the scenes or trying to make diplomatic inroads. I think he authentically and sincerely despairs at what is happening in Gaza. Would you dispute that?
I don't dispute that at all, but I think the problem is what we have, and I spoke to you last week, is we've got a genocide taking place, and it's not a case of just adults being murdered.
Well, then,
it's just the humanitarian side of this is so horrendous.
But that is why those two inadequate words, proportionality and sustainability, kick in. And you've brought in a word that is far from inadequate and still very controversial, the word genocide. But if you believe, as you clearly do, that a tipping point has been passed, and most or many, many international scholars of genocide who we've spoken to on this program agree with you, then doesn't that take away from the idea that Starmer is bowing to pressure from the left and instead reacting to a tipping point being passed? I think the word starvation entering the discourse will, historians of the future will see that perhaps in rather bigger lights than we do.
Even when you even see Trump using it, which I think it's your previous caller said it might be that Starmer is manoeuvring in the background, which I think is much more his style. But equally, you've got people, I mean, my family were a victim of a genocide, and so I'm very acutely aware of using that word and not throwing it around just for effect. It is literally what, when you see a government pursuing an action that is actively trying to destroy a population. And I think, as you say, the tipping point has been reached. And yet our influence is now so denuded that we are scrabbling around to try and push other people in the right direction.
So he's done it.
Other countries.
I mean, these are the scales that we are consulting today, aren't they? The international versus the domestic. And for you, the much easier question to answer is, in terms of why he's done it or what it's likely to achieve, is on the domestic political stage, not the international.
It feels like it, but yeah. I might be wrong, and I'm happy to be, you know, I am willing to accept that I am wrong on that, but it certainly feels that it's an indicator to what he's struggling with here, because he is very eloquent on the international stage.
Yes,
there is no denying that. But however, we're all seeing the struggle domestically, and I think there has to be some sort of indicators to his, you know, the membership and to the people who would have just voted for the Labour Party last year, that he's being actively,
it could be both, can't it?
It could be both.
I need you to know that I'm listening to you, but also that I too have reached a point where I can no longer sit by and do nothing, even if what I can do is ultimately going to prove to be meaningless. That's what I mean by dull politics, even in the most deadly and hideous contexts. Dull politicians. I think Steve made a point about this, actually. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is. It's interesting, isn't it, James? After several years of turmoil and irrational leadership under Johnson and Truss, etc., we finally get a sensible, measured and stable leader, and it all feels wrong. This is Steve in Lancashire. We want more radical leadership. People coming out with, you know, sweeping sound bites and statements, and that's not what he does. But the idea that he's done something because he feels that he has to, but deep down he knows that it won't change anything, is a rather bleak reflection upon where we sit internationally at this point in history. 10:31 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Some 1.9 million people in Japan have been placed under tsunami evacuation orders. A warning covering Hawaii has been downgraded, with residents told they can return to their homes with caution. A cabinet minister's rejected claims that Britain is rewarding Hamas by moving towards recognising a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer has promised to take that step by September unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. Officials in Spain say two British boys aged 11 and 13 have died after getting into difficulty in the sea. The brothers had been swimming on a beach in the northeastern city of Tarragona. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers. A high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers. Where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one. Where every little thing you do makes a big difference.
Superstar, you did it!
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
About what?
About Boots Optician's Ultimate Eye Test with OptiMap Scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
I can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about OptiMap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians.
Selected stores, charges apply. Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
Searching for a holiday? Here's an idea. Don't type cheap flights to wherever into your browser. You know you do it. Search Kayak instead. Let us do the finding for you. All the great flight deals from hundreds of travel sites, all in one place. Go on, do it, do it. Listen to the waves. They're calling your name. Not literally, obviously, unless your name is Kayak. Kayak! You're thinking about it, aren't you? Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 10:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And, I mean, massive props, as the kids say, to Daniel. I didn't think we'd get an idiot's corner today. We haven't had one for a while, actually. But this is an absolute classic of the genre. Why does James O'Brien allow the current, quotes, stroke, last caller to refer to someone's skin colour while calling them a maniac without any challenge? Would this be okay to do if referring to Mandela or Obama? I genuinely sat here thinking, what's he on about? And he means someone referring to Donald Trump as being mango or orange. Daniel, that's not his real skin colour, mate. It's not the same as Barack Obama or Nelson Mandela being black. He's orange because he paints himself orange. I can't quite process the notion that I need to explain this to you. But if I painted myself green and you commented on me being green, that wouldn't make you a racist. I mean, they're may well be things that you do in your life that would make you a racist. Whether or not comparing Nelson Mandela's blackness to Donald Trump's orangeness is one of them, I don't know. But I can tell you, with much love, but not much understanding, I can tell you that they are not the same thing, mate. But don't let the door hit you on the backside on the way into Idiot's Corner. 10:35 is the time. Back to the rather more urgent question of... It's such a weird one. Do you think the second question cancels out the first one in a way? Why has Keir Starmer threatened, and no one's disputing my use of that word, why has Keir Starmer threatened to recognise the state of Palestine? 03456060973. What is it going to achieve? 03456060973. It's tricky, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't cancel it out completely, but it sets you off in two very different directions, one in which substantive observable change is sought, and one in which any changes that this action brings about are going to be below the surface and originally invisible, I think. Ahmed is in Woking. Ahmed, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello.
I was just laughing at your comparison for the racist comments about orange. So,
well, you live and learn, eh? They walk among us, Ahmed. They walk among us.
It made me laugh. I don't know, my humble opinion, there's a couple of layers for that question about what would it achieve and what does it mean. I think, in one hand, Keir Starmer, as a person who's really well knowledgeable about the law, potentially the international law, he must start to realise that actually there's a much stronger case is being built up at the moment against all the companies and countries that actually, I don't want to say complicit, but actually facilitating what's happening in Gaza. Not necessarily since the last 18 months, but potentially for the last 3 months of them not taking action, of preventing the starvation.
That's the word, isn't it? I think we keep circling back to this. If we were asking a question today about what has changed, I think the reality of it and the frequency of the word being used, starvation seems to be a big pivot point.
Well, it is what's taking place. It is weaponizing food for certain gains, which we don't know what these gains are other than actually killing people and committing genocide. I think what does it mean by itself? Many countries now are either in a position where they're shifting their position or they're reviewing their position. Don't forget that over 90% of countries that are members of the United Nations have actually acknowledged Palestine as a state.
I think we should should remind ourselves, it was in the manifesto, wasn't it, for the Labour Party?
It was.
So,
it was,
I mean,
indeed.
The front pages would look a little bit different, wouldn't they, if it was Labour...
Yeah.
Labour reiterates manifesto pledge.
Exactly. But then also don't forget, as I said, this majority of countries around the world have recognised Palestine as a state. Only few, funny enough, they are all in the West between France, Britain, Canada, Australia and United States and so on. But in this position, any country can declare or acknowledge the state of Palestine.
Of course.
But there is a difference to the UK. There's a historic tie between the UK and the establishment of the state of occupation in 1948. That's a different level. Politically,
well, Balfour was British. In its simplest
and
terms.
And everything before and after, because everything started from the 1800s. But everything was based on that single line, which was originated, funny enough, in Scotland, which is land without people, for people without land. But now for Britain to actually acknowledge and declare Palestine as a state and a member of the United Nations, that means they will acknowledge.
If it does.
And this is where Keir Starmer found himself now in a very tricky position, because he's saying if, or he's putting a condition.
Yes. He's threatening.
He's threatening, but that means he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to do it because he understands, in my analysis or my understanding, he understands the ramification of a decision of, you know, acknowledging Palestine as a state. There's a historic ramification. So there might be moral and financial ramification as well, from both ends, from Palestinian side and from the occupation side. He found himself in a very, very awkward position now.
My initial response to what you just said would be, well, if he doesn't want to do it, why did he put it in the manifesto? To which there are a variety of answers, some of them a bit tinfoil hat, but perhaps the most likely answer to that is to marry that manifesto pledge to what you've just said. He doesn't want to do it like this.
Well, I think the Labour, since Corbyn and onward, there's quite a big movement within the grassroots, in particular the younger generation, and actually even the older generation, that they want that. So, and I think one of you previous callers have said how they were hemorrhaging voters, you know, in favour of the independent voters who wanted to actually go far and beyond them, just saying we support Palestine or we call for ceasefire. So he found himself in a position where he's literally herding cats. He needs to keep catching all the voters left and right. He put it there. It looks good. It will align with what's going on publicly, align with what's going on the street with people, you know, opinion. I don't want to say majority, but there's a public opinion about we need to do something about it. So he wanted to ride the wave.
Mm.
That's my opinion. I don't think it's an interest, isn't it, of his heart.
Okay, we'll never know. I think the foreign secretary who I was with last week. I'm turning into one of those dreadful journalists, aren't I? I know you very well, foreign secretary. I've met him twice. I think that there is, whether it extends to Starmer or not, I think Starmer's history probably challenges some of what you've said. I do think he'll be feeling the horror of what's happening in Gaza very keenly and very personally. I mean, almost everybody is. That's why the words sustainable and unsustainable and proportionate and disproportionate keep popping up again. But if we were to take something from every contributor this morning, there's one point that we've all missed. When you say, why is he doing it? We're thinking of ourselves, as we are often want to do in this country, as being independent actors, as being leaders rather than followers. In fact, to bring Brexit into the conversation, as people that don't need allies or associations or pooling of sovereignty or pooling of power or collective bargaining. Malta, I don't know if you knew this, you probably did. Malta announced last night that they're recognising Palestine in September. No ifs, no buts, no caveats. They're going there, just like France are. There comes a point where international pressure would perhaps become irresistible for Benjamin Netanyahu. Yeah. And Britain, for the reasons you've just described about historical responsibilities, never mind historical associations, for Britain to add itself to that international momentum is a big deal.
It is a big deal on the occupation itself.
But only as part of a much broader movement. And that is quite a hard thing for a British person, a very particular type of British person, will never acknowledge that. And that's one of the reasons why Brexit was successful. But for those of us who grew up with a bright red map and think that Britannia rules the waves, the idea that we are but a cog, a big cog still, on this issue, for the historical reasons that you've alluded to, we are but a cog in much bigger wheels. And Starmer's position then becomes more significant, not less.
Yeah. I think...
don't sound convinced.
No, I am. I'm just agreeing with you on the point that I believe as an individual, Keir Starmer will have that goodness in his heart. I think politically he's tied with so many different ropes around him and different influence and groups around him. I think there's an important normally, or usually, to put a difference between a personal... the politician, yeah, 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 and then yeah. The personal aspect, and then their position as a politician. It's two different
things. Of course
things.
There is. There is for Starmer. Some of the leaders or some of the prominent politicians we've had in recent years are completely unable to separate the personal from the political. In fact, their politics is defined entirely by what they think will be of personal, most or greatest personal advantage to them. 10:44 is the time. This is from Matty, who is in Israel. In my opinion, he writes, the carnage in Gaza is only a PR success for Hamas if the world moves against Israel for it. This actually came in before I made the point to Ahmed, but it very much fits in with the suggestion I made a moment ago that we need to see the UK, however hard it may be for some people, as part of broader international movements rather than as sort of pioneer and world leader and Britannia, the ruler of the waves. Matty goes on, recognising a Palestinian state is seen by Hamas as a seal of approval for their narrative versus Israel's stance that there is no famine in Gaza. Allies not backing Israel in the most complex of situations is seen as a betrayal by Israel. And you know, you substitute the words most complex of situations for unbearable of situations or indefensible of situations, and the point still holds. It's a decision that Starmer takes fully cognizant of the UK's role on the world stage. A lot of the commentary today, and I know I've got a bit of an obsession with it, but it is really, really important to where the UK stands today. A lot of the coverage today that doesn't recognise where the United Kingdom sits on the international stage, the people who are deluded, are most likely to be people that also supported Brexit. And that is because they haven't accepted, and no one wants to accept, a diminishment in status or a reduction in importance. But unless you can get your head around that, you're probably not going to be able to see what Starmer is doing at the moment quite as clearly as those of us who have got our heads around that. It's not like I say, it's not a welcome lesson, but Starmer is part of a process. It's not as important when Malta announces that it is going to recognise the Palestinian state. It's more important when the UK does it, but it's nowhere near as important as it would have been at previous points in history. Probably, if you're not going to sue me for amateurism, at any point prior to Suez. It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Parents want some help in being able to protect their child's childhood. Finding a way in which you can protect children from the worst of the content online is a very, very good thing. That being said, I think there is some confusion about now what responsibilities we are giving 16-year-olds. You can vote, but you can't go onto particular websites because it's too old for you.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Now we're talking. Okay.
in.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Society's rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, I mean car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know if this needs clarifying, but the conversation is about the British decision, the UK government's decision to recognise the state of Palestine, but only if Israel commits to a ceasefire. I'm not sure we've dug further into the ultimatum status, the threat status of this, and whether or not that potentially does not more harm than good, but whether it actually robs Starmer's position of any meaningful agency. Because my clever clog's point about us now only being part of a much bigger wheel, a much bigger machine, doesn't actually prevent him from going as far as Malta has gone. And he has not gone as far as Malta has gone, or indeed as far as France has gone. That's diplomacy. That's him hoping, I think, that Netanyahu will stop the carnage in Gaza, and yet not going as far as he could to bring that about. It's weird hearing Priti Patel, who declined to disclose that she was fired as an international development secretary for having secret meetings with members of the Israeli government and misleading the British public about it. But Kemi Badenoch's made a shadow foreign secretary, so I suppose it's just about understandable why you'd invite her views on this subject into the public sphere. But her talking about what the Tories would do differently or about what Labour is doing wrong, seeming to completely miss that fact about what diplomacy is. If it come out now and say, right, that's it, we're recognising the state of Palestine, then you are closing down possibilities for conversation. If you say, look, we've tried everything else, but seriously, if you don't stop starving these people, then we're going to have to do this thing that you really don't want. Now that, to me, becomes the definition of diplomacy. It is give and take. It is a negotiation. It's weird that, I mean, it's not weird that Priti Patel doesn't understand anything, but it's weird that it has apparently eluded other people. 10:52 is the time. Claire is in Ealing. Claire, what would you like to say?
Hello. So I think there's some layers to it. I've been going over it in my head.
No kidding. Go on.
I know. I've been going over it in my head, yes. And it is such a strange decision, because it's like, I don't think it is meaningful now. It is too little, too late. But, I mean, I do wonder.
But as long as there are people alive in Gaza, it's never too late to bring about the end.
No, too late to have a real effect on Israel. I think one of the problems is Keir Starmer is just so cautious as a person. And his messaging this whole past year has always been sort of very on the fence. And I think it's almost sort of become to like this big fault where he sort of locked himself into this position where he doesn't feel like he can make a big point. And I do, while I was waiting, I was listening to like your points about like Brexit, yeah, and all the other people's points. And there's part of me wondering, is it the lawyer in him? Because,
but I see that as a good thing.
I don't know. I think sometimes it is, but in this specific case, I don't know if it is.
Well, what would you rather have? If I mean, to take us back to the layers and the complication, what would you rather have? A lawyer? If I can take the opposite for ease of conversation, the opposite of a lawyer would be a bull in a china shop, right?
Yeah, I do not want him to be a bull in the china shop. I just think there's an element. Yeah, there's an element to it where he is so sort of cognizant constantly of where we've ended up politically, that he's gone a little bit too lawyer. And I should point out, like, I have a law degree. I do understand, like, how
well, his somebody brain think
works.
Of the lawyers.
I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing because it does make you very pragmatic.
But you forget, sorry to interrupt, but you've set my little grey cells whirring, and if I don't grab them while they're whirring, then I'll lose the thoughts. Because Trump, you missed Trump out. So he needs to keep Trump sweet, whether we agree with that conclusion or not, and that brings Brexit back into play, of course. He needs to keep Trump sweet as well. He's had quite a good visit with Trump. I mean, it's horrible. It curdles the soul of all decent Brits to see the Prime Minister reduced to paying homage in the court of Donald Trump. But that's another reflection of our diminished status. And he can do what he did and no more, because one of the biggest moving parts in the layers that you describe, if I'm not mixing both of our metaphors too violently, is actually the President of the United States of America. And that prevents him from going further faster.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think he's so pragmatic and he knows, because, you know, from a lawyer's perspective, you have to be able to see everything from other people's sides and almost like not judge the people or the situation, but just take it as it is and work with it. And I think he sometimes forgets how it might seem to the population.
Yeah, well, at least to parts of the population. And it's a population that at the moment is kind of high. I'm not for a minute suggesting you are, but high on history, recent history, and this kind of false patriotism that has been responsible for so much of the damage done to the country in recent years. It's a point picked up by another Steve. I find it very depressing that most callers seem to suggest Starmer is only doing this as some sort of political stunt. He's not a Trump or a brackets Panto close brackets Dame Patel or a Johnson. I'm perfectly happy to accept that he will try anything to end the slaughter and get desperately needed food and medicines into Gaza. Everything else is irrelevant. Good luck to him. And I think that is a really classic example of what happens, or what you miss sometimes when you're addicted to fireworks. Have we become addicted to fireworks? Or is that actually a betrayal of the severity of the seriousness and the severity of the situation? Thank you, Claire. John's in Leeds. John, what would you like to say?
I think Starmer's probably too little too late, and I'd rather see him unconditionally recognise Palestine as a state, but at least it's putting some pressure on Israel.
I think it's only us and one other country that has anything close to a formal trade agreement with Donald Trump. I know he keeps announcing them willy-nilly and left, right and centre, but and of course the people that are comfortable with Donald Trump in this country are the people least likely to admit that the reason why Keir Starmer has little choice but to bend the knee is Brexit. And if he were to do something that annoyed the President of the United States as much as this may, it could end up making everything worse for everybody, and certainly not helping the Palestinian people in Gaza or indeed anywhere else.
I have a cunning plan on that one.
Go on then, Baldrick.
Right, okay. To protect the Palestinian people, you will need to get international peacekeeping forces deployed. And that will primarily be people like Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Turkey, United Arab Emirates. And you want to flood both Gaza and the West Bank. Main thing is then tons of aid going in, tons of support, get money going in there to rebuild.
Yeah.
Now, the only one problem is that the United Nations, America might try and veto that.
Yes.
Ignore the veto, because they're compromised. America's handling things. But you deal with Trump by this way. Firstly, we gather all the evidence on everything that the Israelis have been up to. And if the British are struggling to find it, watch Owen Jones broadcast. Owen Jones has been a hero in broadcasting.
It's kind of good. I'm going to ignite a conspiracy now, because you've mentioned Owen, and I'm about to say it's not a great phone line. But we won't move on yet. I also, you know, go after what has happened in Gaza as forensically as we go after what happened in Israel on October the 7th. I don't think there's anything remotely controversial about suggesting that would be to the benefit of everybody. But go on, what's the rest of your cunning plan?
But the answer to the plan is, the evidence that is of all the nastiness that Israel...
I can't, I'm not hearing it. Sorry, mate. I mean, again, I'm conscious of igniting accusations of some sort of conspiracy. So if we can improve John's phone light... Oh, it's 10:59. Oh, that's it. That's proof. Do you know what I did? He fixed the clock so that whatever it was that John was saying couldn't get out there. Thank you, mate. That was as much of it as I got was helpful. That letter by Sarah Champion, or that she sort of masterminded, 255 signatories as of yesterday. 221 was the number that had read it on Saturday morning. So. The clamour, if you like, or the calls for the kind of, what the action that we saw yesterday got louder over the weekend, but nobody has successfully identified all nine parties from which the 255 signatories were actually drawn. But it makes a mockery of the idea, doesn't it, that this is a left-right issue.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, waves generated by a tsunami have started to hit parts of the US after a huge earthquake off eastern Russia. Nearly 2 million people in Japan have been ordered to leave their homes. An evacuation order in Hawaii has been downgraded, with residents told they can return home with caution. A cabinet minister's rejected claims that a pledge to recognise a Palestinian state is just gesture politics. Sakir Starmer has promised to take that step by September, unless Israel commits to a ceasefire in Gaza. Israel's prime minister's accused the UK of rewarding terrorism. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, has told LBC that is not the case.
This is not a reward for Hamas. Hamas is a vile terrorist organisation that has committed appalling atrocities. This is about the Palestinian people. It's about those children that we see in Gaza who are starving to death, and it's about their parents who, when they try and get their hands on the meagre amount of food that is making its way into the country...
Heidi Alexander has doubled down on the Transport Secretary's criticism of Nigel Farage. Peter Kyle yesterday accused the Reform leader of being on the side of extreme pornographers and Jimmy Savile over Reform's pledge to scrap the Online Safety Act. Mr. Farage has demanded an apology. Figures suggest knife crime in London has increased by nearly 60% in 3 years. A report by the Policy Exchange think tank also says only 1 in 20 robberies in the capital was solved last year. The mayor's office says it's building on progress in cutting violent crime. Report author David Spencer, a former senior detective, says there are certain hotspots.
Most of London, there's very little knife crime. And that's great to aid as a capital. But where there is knife crime, it's very highly concentrated. So we talk about one particular place around Oxford Circus, where there's a very large number of knife crime incidents every single year. And that's been the case year on year.
Official figures show the population of England and Wales grew by more than 700,000 in the year to June 2024. Almost all of the increase was due to international migration, with births and deaths accounting for only small changes. These statistics put the population total at 61.8 million people. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down 20 points, 91.16. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11 is the time. I said in the last hour that it was not appropriate for us to deploy our coma patient. It's a device that we stumbled upon a few years ago, whereby a really helpful way of getting into subjects that some people understand a lot and the rest of us do not understand at all is to posit the existence of somebody who has just woken up after spending a specific period of time in a coma. So somebody who fell asleep, for example, on the night of the referendum and woke up in 2019 to discover that Boris Johnson was Prime Minister and forcing through Parliament a version of Brexit that was absolutely millions of miles away from what he had promised it would be. Or, of course, someone who fell asleep a couple of years ago when the reality of Brexit had kicked in and woke up yesterday to discover that Nigel Farage is somehow still taken seriously in this country and somehow extricated himself from responsibility for the thing that he did as much as anybody to help bring about these weird movements. Some of the answers are sometimes the same, of course. The interests of the right-wing media in promoting whatever is best for the right-wing media. Is it an answer to more questions than any of us should be prepared to tolerate. But this one works a little better, because this is, I think I'm the coma patient here, except I don't have the excuse of having been asleep. Number 10 will host its first reception for online content creators this week. I read something, I wish I could remember who'd written it, about when David Cameron actually tried to invite the new generation of cultural icons into Downing Street. I will find this, because it was really funny. And they said that they realised things weren't going that well for David Cameron when a posh voice in Downing Street was heard to shout out. Here it is. It's Jim Waterson, formerly of The Guardian, who now runs the rather splendid London-centric website. He says, "The moment I knew the Remain campaign was in a bad way was when I was invited to a Get the Youth Out vote meeting in Downing Street." So this would have been David Cameron seeking to get young people on side for the message of Remain. "It was all the tech bros and youth with an F media," writes Jim. "Cameron walked in to ask for ideas, and an older person started shouting in a very posh voice, 'Grime artists! Does anyone have any grime artists?'" And that is a little bit like, is it Steve Buscemi who does that? "Greetings, fellow youths." But he sort of goes undercover somewhere, well into his 20s, if not 30s, and he's pretending to be a teenager. And so I think they got it. Somehow they got away with it on Cool Britannia, didn't they? Did they? I was young then, but I was also on Fleet Street, I think. So I don't know if it was as naff to, it was much naffer to you, perhaps. But no, it can't have been that, because you get Noel Gallagher to turn up at Downing Street, and Blair somehow managed to embrace that spirit, didn't he? That feel that the country had at the time, and didn't end up looking like dad dancing is the phrase that I want. The political equivalent of dad dancing. So you've got one of David Cameron's posh colleagues shouting out, "Do we have any grime artists?" at a gathering of the youth designed to sign them up for a political movement. And that is the political equivalent of dad dancing. And on Blue Sky, which is the social media platform that I use these days since Twitter became an absolutely irredeemable sewer, quite a lot of people are sniffing at a story about Number 10 hosting a reception for influencers. And although a couple of commentators have suggested that this is an Armando Iannucci script in the making, how do you do, fellow kids? That was the line that Steve Buscemi said. How do you do, fellow kids? And he looks far too old to have a skateboard over his shoulder, which he does in the infamous clip. And it leads itself immediately into that territory. But only if you're, what's the word I want? Ignorant. I'm trying to think of a nice word, but I can use a nasty word because I'm describing myself. So insulated from modernity, insulated from elements of modern media. Ignorant, actually, of the engines of influence. Funny, we can sit here and pontificate until the cows come home on the role that social media has played in radicalizing far-right and incel men, and to some extent women in this country. We actually ignore the rest of it. We ignore sometimes, and again, I'm speaking from a position of guilt, if you like, or at least being part of the problem, not the solution. You you ignore, I have ignored, this absolutely huge world, which probably, and it pains me to say this, probably exercises more influences over more minds than what I grew up wanting to work in. The elements of the media, whether broadcast or print, the traditional media. Radio gets a little bit of a pass on this, you know, because we fit into so many different places and spaces. And, you know, for good or for ill, the viral clip has created an entirely new format, an entirely new medium that does actually reach young people, lends itself, a clip of someone in a radio studio lends itself to TikTok as much as, or almost as much as, a specifically made clip of someone talking directly into their own phone then being put on TikTok. So radio is a little bit different in some areas. But I think the reason why an announcement that Number 10 is hosting a reception with influencers for the first time ever can be greeted with a degree of mockery and a degree of comedy, are really, really missing the point. And if they didn't learn it from Donald Trump's presidential campaign, then there's a danger that they never will. These are people whose names you may not know, who are exerting more influence over more of the population than those of us who like to congratulate ourselves on being prominent pundits and commentators. So how simplistic can my question be on this? Remember, I'm trying to build a bridge between, and I can't do one of those metaphone-ins. We got away with it last week. That was a beautiful hour of radio. We did an hour of radio on Friday that was dedicated to people, dedicated to inviting people to who don't like talking to ring in and talk to us. I don't know that I've ever been prouder of an hour of radio. Some of the messages I got over the weekend were really quite very moving. Thank you, by the way, for those. But so sometimes we go a bit meta. It can be funny, like the time I nearly did a phone in about what it's like not to have a phone. But it can also sometimes just work in ways that you could never predict in a focus group meeting or even a production meeting. Let's have a phone in. Let's get people who hate talking to ring in and talk to us. Because whenever we've done oracy in the past, it was always hijacked the conversation by pompous oafs like me who have always loved the sound of their own voice. What if you couldn't speak very well? Or what if you didn't like the sound of your own voice? Or what if you had problems articulating yourself verbally that you never had when you had a pen in your hand or a keyboard beneath your fingertips? And it was, seriously, I go back and listen to it if you missed it. Friday from 11 till 12 on the LBC app. It was a truly beautiful conversation. And this is, I mean, a little bit nudging that kind of territory, because it's about the people who are arguably replacing people like me, right? Or replacing the newspaper columnists, or replacing what I think we can probably call, without fear or favour, traditional journalism. Words like legacy and mainstream are very loaded, aren't they? I saw Nigel Farage writing in the Daily Telegraph the other day about how awful legacy media or establishment media is. I thought, mate, you're writing in the Daily Telegraph. Give your head a wobble, will you? It doesn't get more legacy or establishment or mainstream than that. So I think traditional is an unloaded word. A kind of pre-internet media, which still slaps, still matters. It matters rather more than it should in statistical terms. It matters rather more than it should in logistical terms, political terms. But, you know, politicians turn first to newspapers in the morning and not to influencers. So do their communications department. So indeed do most people working in traditional media. And it means that we have this extraordinary dichotomy in public discourse. It means that the people who are riding high on the traditional horses of communication have little or no knowledge of the people who are either coming up fast behind them or who have already overtaken them. I have a passing acquaintance with what's happened in the United States. I've got mates who listen to Joe Rogan close to religiously, even as his own journey has become increasingly complex, let us say. And the influence that he exerts over his listeners and perhaps beyond, I'm not entirely sure, is extraordinary. We are obviously familiar with Andrew Tate now, and again, probably as proof of the pudding that I'm trying to serve you this hour, we move too slowly on recognising the influence he was exerting for precisely the reasons that explain why. We don't know about the good people either. See, oh, it's online. Somebody my age, I don't know where the cut-off point would be. I'm 53. I know, it's incredible, isn't it? It's because I play a lot of tennis. I'm 53, and somebody my age in my industry is still thinking, oh, that's on the internet, it doesn't really count. I can tell you the exceptions. Martin Lewis probably invented the alternative to the traditional. He was one of the very first people, I think in the entire world, let alone this country, one of the very first people to identify that he didn't need a newspaper column, or he didn't need a television program or a radio program. He kind of needed to get on them in order to promote his website. But this, and of course that was pre-broadcast in its earliest incarnations. It subsequently embraced every media under the sun. But he kind of recognized, and I wish I had, we were at LSE at the same time. I wish I'd spotted the opportunities that were there that didn't involve trying to get on a graduate traineeship at the BBC or the Daily Express or the Times or all the other places that turned me down year after year after year. He got it, and we kind of give him a free pass. Oh, no, he's the real deal. But the rest of them, they're internet people. They're internet people. They don't really count. So I don't want to talk about the toxic ones. I want to talk about the ones that Downing Street will be inviting into their inner sanctum imminently in order to essentially reflect that they reach voters on platforms that go far beyond the traditional media. And I need a proper... I know Martin's on the telly now, Chris, but he wasn't when he started. I need a proper crash course in this because I'm a little bit embarrassed. My daughters would laugh at me for the levels of ignorance I display in this field. I know that, for example, we get people on LBC. Abby Foster comes on quite a lot to talk about personal finance, and her status is dependent entirely on the quarter of a million followers that she's got on social media. And that's a huge number. That's the kind of numbers that the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph can only dream of. And yet, here we are, still conducting conversations that reflect a position that's probably been out of date for 20 years, certainly for 2 years, and possibly for 10. The first time I got, what did we call them? We didn't call them influencers. We called them, they were YouTubers. First time we invited a YouTuber into the studio, I'd seen the figures, I'd seen the statistics that were in place. And I thought, well, we have to recognise this. And ideally, in cynical commercial terms, we have to try and get a bit of the action here. What's going on? And he came in. He was a really nice lad. He was a bit confused by me, and I was a bit confused by him. And I spoke to him for about 20 minutes, and at the end of the conversation, I still had no idea what he did. I said, but what do you actually do? And I think he said to me, well, sometimes I film myself going through... I recently filmed myself going through an old drawer and just talking about all the bits that I found. Now, at the time, I thought, well, that's just ridiculous. But if you're a really good communicator and a brilliant storyteller, you can make magic out of anything. Just ask Peter Kay about garlic bread. You don't have to be singing a song or doing anything important in order to be engaging. And that's the first thing that an influencer needs to be. They need to be engaging online. But... is Owen Jones, John in the last hour mentioning Owen? I don't know that he is. He was an author and then he was a Guardian columnist and now he has taken his work largely online, but he's done it the other way round from what I think the Downing Street communications department is seeking to woo. It's a brilliant question from Dave. If I had to push you for the youngest left-wing influencer that you know, who would you say? To which my answer would actually be Jimmy the Giant, mate. Because my youngest introduced me to his work quite recently, and I was pretty impressed. He is someone who is clearly exerting influence over A-level politics students. And that makes my point really helpfully. A-level politics students. Middle class, inevitably, because she's related to me, but middle class A-level politics students citing and listening to Jimmy the Giant in pursuit of, enlightenment, illumination, education. How many political correspondents, particularly of 45 or older, have ever heard of the fella? So I need to change my act, as it were. No, that sounds cynical. I need to completely change my position on this. I need to recognise, as Downing Street is trying to do, that influencers are a hugely important phenomenon and a hugely important element of public discourse and influencing people. A couple of people pointing out that you shouldn't ask Peter Kay about garlic bread, because if you do, he'll chuck you out of his gig, which is grossly unfair. He was dealing with, a recidivist heckler, but it's quite a funny gag. What is it? Seriously, I hate these topics and I love them. If I get the question right, we're all going to have a treat. We're all going on a sleigh ride. If I get it wrong, you'll soon know. Because you need to presume that I know nothing, which is pretty close to the truth. Presume that I know nothing and tell me why Downing Street are inviting influencers, between 70 and 90 content creators who I have probably never heard of. Why is Downing Street inviting 70 to 90 content creators into Downing Street? 0345 6060973. Will they have heard of each other? I don't, that's how little I know about this universe, this environment, this, what is it? So why is Downing Street inviting 70 to 90 content creators into the inner sanctum? They've all been engaging with Number 10, apparently, during Labour's first year in government. And I, as a relatively prominent member, more prominent at times than others, of the UK media, I don't really know what's going on. And I'd really like you to tell me. All right, Gary Stevenson, we know Gary, and he came to prominence online. Gary's probably the best example, actually, and he's now an author, and he's brilliant. 1.4 million subscribers on YouTube, which James points out, that's a familiar number. And he has, of course, also been a guest on Full Disclosure, which was absolutely fascinating. I really like the guy. Another alumnus, actually, of the London School of Economics. We could do a new remake of Three Men in a Boat. Me, Martin Lewis and Gary Stevenson going up the Thames in a boat and talking about economics and money. Actually, no, that would never work. I wouldn't have anything to say. But and here is the point. They are influencers. There are 70 to 90 of them being invited into Downing Street. And by 12 o'clock today, I want to know what that means. All right, 0345 6060 973, and who they are. We can even do that now, because, you know, I sit in the car listening to Jimmy the Giant and think, God, this lad's good. This lad's reaching parts that I aspire to reach. If you can communicate with young people like that, you're right. So you feel free to tell me others as well that are likely to be on this list of influencers visiting Downing Street. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Explore the world in a way that respects the people and places you visit with Intrepid Travel. As UK and Ireland GM Joanna Reeve explains,
our trips are all about small groups guided by amazing local leaders. So we really want you to experience the places most tourists overlook, which is great for you, but also it's really good for the communities you visit. So think about travelling out of season, look for experiences far beyond the typical tourist hotspots, avoid crowds, and visit a Greek farm for some delicious local food.
To find out more, search Intrepid Travel. We're not over tourism.
Introducing the Ford Capri, rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter, and you could win the Icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
The new Big Arch has arrived at McDonald's. A burger so iconic, it's got its own sauce. A signature Big Arch sauce. Sounds serious, doesn't it? It is. Seriously good. Big Arch. The big McDonald's hunger. Until 9th of September, from 11 a.m, participating restaurants only, subject to availability.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 23 minutes after 11, and it's a kind of scary subject, this, in a way, because we're wading into something that is poised to be, if not already, more important than what we do. And by that, I mean people like me, for a living. And what is unforgivable is how little we know about them. Some of the numbers that are being put in front of me, and unfortunately, I genuinely don't feign ignorance when we come to conversations like this. I truly know as little as I am telling you that I know. But when I look at some of the numbers, I just want to establish for certain that people are British, but before I share some of these numbers with you. But we're talking about six, seven, eight, nine-figure sums of likes or followers, millions of followers, potentially over a billion likes in some cases. And, you know, we count our radar numbers. That's a national radio station in similar metrics, not on the likes but on the following. But if you've got 16.6 million followers, you are more popular than anybody in traditional media who any of us can name at this point. And no one sells books or papers or has listening figures like that. Almost nobody. It's extraordinary. And if you can name the few who do, you almost certainly can't name the influencer equivalent. So what is it all about? And who are the people that you think will be going into Downing Street? Patrick's in Southampton. Patrick, what would you like to say?
Hiya. So I used to work with one of your colleagues and then joined a very large YouTube channel.
Okay.
I studied marketing to, like, master's degree level. Yes. And one of the subjects I focused on, because I didn't understand it, was influencers.
Okay. When was this, mate?
A couple of years ago.
Right.
And so the whole focus was on the metaverse, but I was interested in how influencers are pushing content onto it.
Yes.
If you take a traditional brand like Toshiba, you know what they do. If you then replace that with an influencer, that's kind of how it works. So an influencer builds up kind of loyalty to a person, and the person builds up loyalty to them through shared interests or through provision of a need, i.e. information or just daily content. So because we consume content differently now, influencers are what are feeding directly to us, and it's become bigger and bigger.
How big is the gulf between what I think we'd both call traditional media and what you were studying when you were doing your master's? I mean, how normal did I sound when I was describing two almost entirely independent universes, which the traditional one is largely ignorant? Not just ignorant, it's worse than ignorance because of scale of the modern one, of the new one.
Yeah, it's huge. I guess it kind of stands out in the fact that, like, I listen to you most days.
Thank you.
That's all right. But
what? Wait, whoa. Go on then, what's the but?
But someone who consumes kind of daily content can listen to 20 influencers a day and get fed directly. I think the gulf is huge. Like, I will read traditional media because I like it. I don't particularly like how influencers generally, that's a bit of a generalization. Oh. I don't like how influencers generally deliver content. It's too short form for me.
Okay, but that's a very personal perspective and one that possibly puts you somewhat swimming against the tide of your generation.
Absolutely, yeah. So the gulf is massive. I got invited down to a conference with Barclays, and it was kind of me and four other YouTube channel kind of people, and it just felt really strange because we were surrounded by people from, you know, like the Telegraph.
Yes.
And I was kind of in awe because I used to love doing journalism.
Sure.
And the other three YouTubers like, I don't understand what we're doing here. No one really understands what we do.
This is extraordinary then. So over someone on the other side. So this is, if it were a Venn diagram, who would be in the intersection apart from you? I mean, because by your own account, your enthusiasm for traditional media marks you out. And it, so and so the ignorance is mutual, is it? The influencers at that meeting would never have heard of your average newspaper columnist or, God forbid, your average very popular left-leaning radio host?
Probably, yeah. I think you might.
But I'm on TokTik. I'm on TikTok. That was a deliberate joke, by the way. But so, the ignorance is mutual. Mutual ignorance.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. So, if someone a full-time content creator or influencer, they will often look at source material through newspapers, this kind of thing, to see what they're going to talk about, because obviously they need a subject every day. I specialised in video games, so it was quite easy for me because someone just sent me one and go, OK, I can talk about that.
Well, you're not likely to get invited into Downing Street, are you? Well, unless while playing video games on Twitch, you're also providing political commentary or something like that. Who's likely to be invited into Downing Street, Patrick?
I genuinely don't know, because one of the things that the government, or one of the previous governments did do, is invited our company to Downing Street and gave us a little bit of suggestions on how we can make our game more English. That was quite fun. And then we got a little tax deduction for it. So there is a connection through video games and influencers and 10 Downing Street, because I think the country's the UK is quite creative. So if we can fuel video games in that way.
So we don't know. I mean, it'd be quite nice to see the list. You haven't been invited yet yourself.
No, but I don't do content creation anymore.
Okay. What are you doing now? That's none of my business. Can you have a crack for a few of my listeners and just giving us two sentences on exactly what an influencer is? And it may be that you can't.
I would describe it as a new version of branding.
Yeah. That's your master speaking, because you've lifted the bonnet and dismantled the engine, whereas people perhaps need an earlier description of it. It's someone who creates content which offers up advice or opinions and completely bypasses or sidesteps traditional modes of media. Patrick, that was really helpful. Thank you. 0345 6060973 is the number you need if you think you can be helpful, either more helpful or slightly less helpful than Patrick. The point of this conversation is that 70 to 90 content creators are going into Downing Street tomorrow afternoon. If it is personal finance content, which is what people like Abby Foster and Gabriel Nussbaum do, it's easy to get your head around why. But what about foreign affairs content creators like Alex Dragonetti and Tatton Spiller and Chris Chandler? Who's heard of them? And how bad is it that I haven't? Oh, Lord, that's the thing, isn't it? That when it was, what was it? I think it was bloody Twitter, you know, because I was on Facebook. I remember thinking, there's going to be... Well, look, I'll tell you after the headlines with Thomas Watts.
Millions of people are under tsunami warnings after one of the most powerful earthquakes ever recorded. The 8.8 magnitude quake struck off eastern Russia overnight, with alerts now in place across parts of the US and Japan. Ministers have rejected claims by Israel that Britain is rewarding Hamas by moving towards recognising a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer's promised the UK will do that by September unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. Four boys aged between 14 and 17 have been charged with attempted murder after a stabbing in East London. A 14-year-old boy remains in a critical condition after the attack in East Ham on Saturday. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers this afternoon. A high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
Today's the day. The day that Jim feels he can't carry on. Unable to see beyond his problems. His pain unbearable. So thankfully today, he reached out to us, Samaritans, and that could save Jim's life. Leave a gift in your will to Samaritans and support people who are struggling to carry on. Help us save lives today, tomorrow, always. To find out how, search Samaritan's Wills.
Have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
I can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about Optimap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians.
Selected stores, charges apply. Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3am and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:34 is the time. During the NATO summit earlier this month, TikTok creator Max Klimenko interviewed Prime Minister Keir Starmer. It received 1.3 million views just on TikTok, which is a big number. And I don't know how significant it is that I've never heard of Max, and that is on me, not on him. But what is interesting to me about this, particularly with what Patrick just said to us about brands, is that I would normally know the brand. So if you said to me, oh, the Times got an interview with Starmer at NATO that you should read, and I'd say, oh, who did it? And they'd say, oh, Joe Bloggs. And I go, oh, I don't know them. And that wouldn't, but it would surprise me if I didn't know them, but it would not be beyond the realms of possibility that I didn't know the individual journalist that got the interview. But I'd know the platform, or what Patrick would call the brand. I'd know the brand. What you have here is big, big players in what I would describe as my world professionally, and your world in terms of consumers, massive players of whom I have no knowledge whatsoever. I don't even know the brand, let alone the perpetrator, let alone the prominent, the figurehead. And I can't remember feeling as stupid as I feel today in the context of just not having paid enough attention to things that are important, because I felt a little bit stupid when all the hideous stuff took over, particularly with regards to Andrew Tate and all the other people you can list. And I think probably because I thought if you give them oxygen or if you give them attention, then you only make the situation worse. And I was wrong about that for a start. I kind of turned off non-traditional. Listen, if you think I'm bad, you could make a list of people who are around my age or older, and they will be considerably worse than I am. Just not paying any attention to. And of course, part of the problem for those of us who rely on traditional media is you're not going to read about the people that don't, because it would be a bit like a turkey voting for Christmas. If you were to read about how much money someone's making on Substack, it makes you less likely to buy the place that you read it in tomorrow. You're going to think, crikey, that must be good. I'm going to go and check that out. It is this, writes Anthony, how the silent generation felt in the 1970s when Pebble Mill was taken off. It wasn't taken off air in the 1970s. I just want to know more about this world, and whether or not you think, as someone who knows more about it than I do, you think that Venn diagram is going to get bigger. So at the moment, you've got two circles. You've got traditional media and you've got influencers, right? In that intersection there, you've got people like Gary Stevenson. You've got people like Owen Jones, although he traditionally came up through traditional media. You've got a few other people that have been mentioned to me today, Jimmy the Giant, but you've also got Max Klimenko, and you've got the Tatton Spiller and Chris Chandler, most of whom, if I've heard of, it's a vague whisper in the back of my mind somewhere, thanks to one of my daughters telling me. And that means that the intersection there, there's hardly anybody in it. On one side, there's loads of people that I can't name. And on one side, there's loads of people that I can name. And in the middle, there's a vanishingly small number of people that I would be able to name. But my ignorance here is unforgivable precisely because the influence being exercised by that circle full of people I've never heard of is at least as great, if not becoming greater than, the influence being exercised over there. Isn't it? And yet, you know, everybody in my line of work comes to work every morning with a sheaf full of newspapers and they go through, we should be talking about this. And yet this massive circle over here full of people I have never heard of is at least as influential to public opinion, the opinions of the public, as the massive circle over there full of people that I haven't just heard of. I know them in many cases. And it makes this story quite pertinent as well. The BBC is at risk of a fresh exodus of viewers as older audiences increasingly turn to YouTube over traditional television channels. So this is people changing the way that they absorb things. YouTube is now closing in on the BBC as the most watched service in this country. I think they're on 14% and the BBC is now on 19%. Numbers that would have been double, treble that when we were kids 20 years ago. Over 55s, roughly doubling the amount of YouTube content they watch on TVs to about 11 minutes per day. So you've got this extraordinary Venn diagram wherein nobody in the two massive circles has much consciousness or understanding of each other. Just give me a ring and say something clever, will you? Because I feel like I'm groping around in the dark on this for something illuminating or for something helpful. And at the moment, I don't know what it is, except that 70 to 90 content creators are going to Downing Street tomorrow afternoon. And most of the professional journalists standing outside will not know who any of them are. Michael is in Nottingham. Michael, what would you like to say?
Well, James, as a wise man once said, if you're willing to change your mind, you can never be wrong. And here's the thing, okay? Even as somebody who consumes content online myself and as a small creator myself, people who make content on TikTok and other apps like that, on YouTube, they reach wide audiences on a weekly basis. I can reach 100,000 people, and I'm a small creator. So sure. If you can imagine somebody like Gary Stevenson, who has a reach of millions, imagine how many people that he can reach on a weekly basis. So what the government is trying to do, which I think you know what they're trying to do, is they're trying to tap into that influence. But that'll only work if they really go into it in the same way that, say, Donald Trump did it, compared to how the Democratic Party tried to do that. Because the Biden administration also had famous YouTubers and TikTokers going to the White House. If I can mention them, people like Hassani, for example, who are really popular on the left side of politics, they were invited into those circles. But unless the government really pushes into it, they won't get the benefit of it compared to how the right side of politics uses social media. So it's all about...
Well, how much of it is opinion-driven, though? Because your analysis works perfectly, because I don't think that they'll be necessarily trying to sign people up to be cheerleaders for them, although that would be nice. They're just recognising that if you want to get your message out there, then you need to speak to people who have huge platforms. And whether it is LBC or an influencer, that doesn't necessarily mean that the person interviewing you will be sympathetic to your politics or sympathetic to you personally. So is that a difference? Would the influencer, well, I mean, I can't really talk about traditional media being unbiased, but how opinion-driven is influencer media?
No, but that's the thing, because once you've built that relationship with your favorite influencer, they can start tapping into political topics that you might not necessarily agree with. But if they keep talking about those things, they could start to persuade you. And they then have you in your pocket in the morning when you wake up. You check your app at lunchtime. You check your app in the evening. You check your app.
And how do I build that up? How do they or I or you build up that relationship without or before going into the opinion type stuff? So you could be an influencer on anything, including video games, as Patrick explained to us a moment ago, and you could end up being an important voice in political discourse.
you build that relationship by posting content of you just being yourself. And what most of the
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is always what happens when my brain is trying to catch up with my caller.
Okay.
Then we're back to that lad from 15 years ago telling me that he had just spent an hour going through an old drawer and making content because he is putting his personality on display.
Yes, that's what people want. People want to engage with the real you, because one of the things that happens to most content creators when they start making content is they'll make a video and it might get 100 views and the next video gets 10 views and they get disheartened. But what they're not considering is that there is somebody who is going to actually enjoy watching them open drawers or clean the patio or do something that you might think is mundane. There's somebody out there who will enjoy who you are doing that. And then eventually the algorithm starts pushing you out to other people who might be adjacent to that and think, oh, you know what? He does have some other views on this thing. I'll follow him and I'll just watch him. And before you know it, you are reaching hundreds of thousands of people per week. And that's all you need, right? If you have...
Of course it is, and we know that it's commoditized. And so we when we're analyzing the rise of the far right or the death of truth, and whether people will like it or not, that's what Donald Trump represents. Everything is bad, but actually, I mean, authenticity is historically good, and you could perhaps generate enormous numbers by being on the side of explaining things and being on the side of the truth.
No, it has to be entertainment, James. It can't be you explaining how something works.
In an entertaining fashion.
It has to be entertaining, yes. So,
and you establish how entertaining you are in any way available. It doesn't have to be that your particular area of interest or even where you end up. How many people have been on journeys? Have you been on a journey? Did you start off making content about... Because there's always a danger of being led by... algorithms and numbers, isn't there? There's always a... Because I think this has happened to people that I used to know a bit, in that during the lockdown, they saw that they were getting bigger numbers for their anti-vax nonsense than they were for anything else at all, and suddenly they've disappeared down rabbit holes that I'm not sure they'll ever get out of. So sometimes... How do you avoid letting the tail wag the dog?
Well, it just comes down to what you believe in and how you would like to present yourself, you know, going forward. So if you start doing anti-vax stuff and then you become aligned with that, that's not a good look.
No,
so
but you're getting numbers you could only dream of when you were doing your DIY tips or your worthy commentary on matters Middle Eastern.
Yes, but if you were only doing that initially and then you realize that the anti-vax stuff is where you get the views, then that depends on that individual who's creating the content. What are they trying to go for? Are they just trying to build up followers?
Because but isn't everybody just trying to build up followers?
Well, initially, that's what you think you want. But then as you start making more content, you realize that having a brand is more important than number of followers. So you could have 20,000 followers, or you could have somebody that has 200,000 followers. But if the person that has 200,000 followers has just built them up because they're just posting anti-vax content, that's not a brand that you can associate with that person. It just means that you consume that person in silence.
Yeah, I see. So, crikey, you're giving me nuance on influencers, and I'm being a bit foolish, obviously, by thinking that there's some sort of homogenous group. In the same way that you could say journalist and mean a million different things, you could say influencer is not the same as someone who is popular on the internet because they're peddling conspiracy theories and lies. They're two different commodities.
Yes, they are.
All they have in common is attention. Their money is made from my attention and your attention. So what I mean, Emma suggests that what I should do is do a short clip of me cycling to work in the morning, then another clip of my green tea deliberation process and my enormous mug, a few seconds of me ruffling newspapers teasingly before going live, 10 seconds here, 3 seconds there, for months and months and months on end, and people start to feel like they're in the room with you, or that they know you in a way that even a particularly intimate and familiar radio presenter can't achieve on the radio.
I need to get something out of you, though. If I was just consuming you doing your everyday activities and I wasn't getting anything out of it...
Oh, no, but I'm still doing the radio show.
Yeah, but you'd have to show us doing the radio show. If you could show us a day in the life of you doing the radio show, then I can say, okay, I know who James O'Brien is. He's a radio presenter, but also this is his personal page. So then I'm going to, you know, follow his page. But if you were just showing me yourself riding a bike every day, or you're doing something, and I wasn't gaining anything out of it, if you were not showing me something that's almost personal to you, other than you riding a bike, then I won't engage in that. But then if you were to show me that you are working in London, you know, you work in this high rise skyscrapers, you're doing all this stuff, that could give me something to aspire to become, as you, for example.
I thought that's been really, really helpful. Do you want to give your work a plug?
Oh, thank you so much, James. Yes, so my name is Michael Maz, and I give career advice. And I have a problem, James, which is that my content is valuable to young people that are looking for work or internships or grads. So they don't follow my page. They'll have a burner account on TikTok. And then when I see them in real life, they'll tell me that they follow me, but they don't follow me, because if they follow me and their friends see my content when I'm posting internships and new opportunities, they want to have a bit of an advantage. So I've got a bit of a double-edged sword.
Oh, God, that's fascinating.
I love all the followers I have, and, you know, everyone's really nice when I see them in public.
I thought you were going to say they can't publicise the fact that they're following me, because then their employers might know that they're looking for other jobs or looking for other work. But actually, they're trying to keep their mates in the dark so that they get to the front of the queue for the gigs that you're telling them about.
That's right, yes, yeah.
Absolutely fair. Thank you, Michael. Maz, M-A-Z, is it?
Yes, M-A-Z on TikTok,
And thank you for what you're doing as well. I mean, there it is. How many preconceptions did Michael just explode at the end of that conversation by telling us what field he worked in? You know, how lazily you might have presumed, he's probably doing video games, or he's probably doing this, or he's probably doing that. But he's not. He's doing careers advice in this space. And he would be, obviously, much more popular in terms of bold, hard numbers were it not for the conundrum or the paradox that he just described at the end there. It's 10 to 12.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Feel the thunder of hooves. The tension as they race past. Your heart in your chest. That split second of silence. Before the roar of the finish. That glorious Goodwood feeling. Qatar Goodwood Festival, presented by Visit Qatar. July 29th to August 2nd. Book now.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream, and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both Captain Nats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result.
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our Spend and Save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:53 is the time. It feels generationally like a really important period, doesn't it? I think in the next hour we're going to look at the number of young people with degrees who are on benefits. A universal credit doesn't mean they're not working, as you well know. But I think in that particular constituency they're much more likely to be working than not. But it does rather give the lie to the notion that this study, this debt, this 3 years of your life will give you wings. And that is something else that people of my vintage might struggle to understand, almost as much as we struggle to understand the rise of the influencer, as you might call it. And yet it's not new, and it's not going away. The notion of this Venn diagram is going to haunt me when I come off air. Two massive circles, one full of people I've never heard of, one full of people I have heard of, precious little by way of intersection, and yet equal almost levels of influence over voters, members of the public, and discourse. I don't even know what I'm asking you anymore. I'm so bamboozled by what I've discovered already. But happily, that hasn't stopped you from ringing in. Martin is in Clacton-on-Sea. Martin, what would you like to say?
Hi, nice to be on the phone to you again. Nice to hear from you. I'm currently doing a Master's of Political Communication. I think we've said that before. But my latest module was actually on PR and comms, and we did a whole load of stuff on influencers. And I, obviously, from the politics background, and then looking at the influencer stuff, and I'm really, I think it's a niche that definitely needs to be tapped into, because...
Is it a niche? Niche feels like an inadequate word, Martin, to me. It feels absolutely enormous already.
Well, yes, but I think the reason you don't know who these people are is very much why they're influential and why they're good, is because they become parasocial relationships with their audience.
Parasocial, is that's the word. That's what... The last lad was explaining to us, isn't it? You'd need to be online a lot to build up that parasocial relationship.
But you build your audience around what it is that you talk about and what it is that you believe, and the way in which you do things, the way you create your content.
Mm.
So you might know one or two influencers because they're the people that you might be influenced by.
No, it's not even that, unfortunately. I might know one or two influencers because they've broken out of their world into mine briefly, either professionally, because they have appeared on programs to discuss things that they do largely online, or personally because... One of my children has been quite taken by somebody, and they put it on in the car. But it doesn't, because they're listening to it in the car, just to get really flipping meta about it. I'm not then going to get other suggestions or tune in again tomorrow, because I'm just listening to it in the car on my daughter's phone, and not on my own space, or whatever the fancy word would be. Not on my own.
They're definitely particularly influential for a particular grouping. So yes. 43% of users that are millennials or Gen Z block ads, for example. So for businesses to communicate, to get around the blocking ads, people don't like to be persuaded. And because influencers don't persuade, they influence. And you don't, because it feels organic, it doesn't feel in any way unauthentic. They're very, very effective at cutting through that kind of
but they're not there just to sell stuff, are they?
No.
That's how they will make their money, in various ways. You know, I shout out to so-and-so, or this was provided by so-and-so, or this program is sponsored by so-and-so. I'm not a million miles away from the advertising model that we use here, but what makes people tune in is what happens in between the pitches and the sales attempts.
I think they're all very similar. I think that I don't know if anyone actually says you should go and buy this. I think the fact
that that's what I'm saying. That's not so. Yeah. So I suppose what I'm trying to nudge you towards is the idea, and I could be completely wrong, that it's not actually that different from traditional media. All that's different is the platform. What works and what doesn't work is actually still quite similar.
If you were to look at media theory, they would say you traditionally break down your media into paid, earned, shared and owned media. I wrote an essay literally a couple of weeks ago on how I think the influencers cut across all of those, because they can be paid to influence. They will only influence on things that they want to influence on, so that's the earned. They're in a shared space to whatever they're talking about, so that's why it's shared. And then they can be owned, because you can also have influencers that work for the organization in which you are representing. The only other media that is similar to that is things like the algorithms that Google uses, which is for authoritative scores for websites and things like that. And I think that ties in really well with what influencers do, because it's all about how much they're trusted.
And that's exactly why Downing Street need to get them in, because they have that thing that you can't, that money can't buy. And that is trust. And I'd go back to saying, I don't imagine, unless they really mess this up, that when people turn up at Downing Street tomorrow, they're going to be signed up as propagandists. They're just reflecting the power and influence, literally influence, that these people have. Martin, thank you. I just want to squeeze in at least one more call. Justin's in Purley. Justin, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I kind of create a bit of content on TikTok myself. And I'm older than you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm 55.
I'm saying wow, not because that's an extraordinary achievement, but because you've embraced this technology so completely. Well, you tell me. You answer whatever questions I've managed to ask this hour.
I think the reason why influencers are now becoming more and more prevalent is because children now. I've got four kids,
right?
And none of them watch news. None of them watch television. They all watch.
They watch
Netflix
screens,
or,
for people listening who may be confused. They watch screens, but they don't watch linear television.
No, exactly. So the only way of actually getting anywhere, getting near them, is by using social media. And there are quite a few actors already on social media that are doing quite well, like Nigel is on there, Mr. Farage.
Is he?
Is on there quite well.
But someone else will be doing that for him, won't they? But, I mean, that doesn't matter.
They are indeed, They are indeed. But he loves the camera, that boy.
Sure.
But He unfortunately is obviously pushing what he wants to push, but I push a more non-biased view of all the politics that are going on. I don't hold a political party, apart from I'm quite liking your party right about now with Zara Sultana.
I thought, what's happened now? I haven't set up a political party. What do you mean, my party? Sorry,
no,
you'd be welcome to join my party should that day ever dawn. What's your name online, if you don't mind me asking?
I'd absolutely love to. My name is The Grumpy Gardener.
Ah, now, people suggested that I should get in touch with you, like today.
Really?
Yeah, that you were one of the names that popped up. Are you going to Downing Street tomorrow?
No, I really wish I was.
So do I.
Oh, my God, really?
You could take me with you. I could be your plus one.
James, you are more than welcome. You are one of my heroes.
But hang on, you haven't been invited either, mate. We're both Billy No Mates on this one. You can't invite me as your plus one to a party you haven't been invited for.
I know, but you got me going. You fired me up during Brexit. During Brexit and everything else. I've listened to you for. We've had conversations about Sadiq Khan going to Amsterdam.
Yes.
When he was over there, and we've had conversations there. We had conversations away from Brexit. I've been talking to you for absolutely years.
I didn't know you were the Grumpy Gardener, which you never told me. What would you say to them if you did get in tomorrow?
Get your act together. Because you're getting it. I think they know what they're up to, but they haven't got the communication right. They're not getting their message out properly to people. They're not using the media properly. I'm not sure if it's down to whoever's doing it, but they try several times to go onto TikTok, onto Instagram, failed because they're not hitting the right mark. They're trying to be. I don't know what they're trying to be. They once did a video where everybody in the cabinet had turned into an animal.
That's very London W1A or thick of it, isn't it?
That's just
shocking.
It is indeed.
They should get, I mean, they might be listening. Well, they will be. Someone will be listening. They always are. But they should get you down there if it's not too late. On a slightly different note, Justin, do you do any gardening content? Or is that just your nickname?
I'm actually a gardener. I'm actually a private gardener.
That's not your online presence.
That's not my online presence.
That's just your nickname.
I've done a couple of gardening things, and one of them went quite well. People are very obsessed when you show them a large amount of nettle.
Well, my cucumbers have gone absolutely bananas this summer.
Fantastic.
Should I be culling them, or do I just sit tight until the little tiny ones get even bigger? Because it's taken over half of my raised bed. One cucumber plant.
Good. Good. Leave them.
I just leave them be.
Give them a bit of. You're probably going to get some rain over the next few days.
Yes.
If not, little bit of tomorite.
I've got some tomorite, actually. My tomatoes have gone bonkers as well. It'll be the weather. It's nothing to do with my fingers. Nothing to do with my green fingers. And final question. You don't seem very grumpy.
I'm never grumpy. I'm. That's the thing. I was grumping because the Tories were in. And it was when they were in that I kind of launched it, because I just couldn't deal with what the madness that was going on around Boris Johnson.
Oh, you and me both. And yeah, actually, you remind me how helpful it was for me to have this outlet. So you went out and built your own. Or grew your own. Justin, thank you. That was nice. Well, I think we're going to have to come back to this, aren't we? And going to have to change the way we approach things slightly, either on air or off air or both.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, millions of people are under tsunami warnings after one of the most powerful earthquakes ever recorded. Alerts have been issued for parts of Japan and the US, as well as China, Ecuador and New Zealand. The 8.8 magnitude quake struck off eastern Russia overnight. Warnings have been downgraded in Hawaii, where this man is sheltering on the ninth floor of his hotel.
We were inside of a restaurant, and all the workers, all the waiters, left their job to try to find higher ground, which was very surprising to us. So we said, if they're panicking, we must panic as well. And so we made it right back to the resort.
Ministers have rejected claims they are engaging in gesture politics by moving to recognise a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer has promised to take that step by September, unless Israel commits to a ceasefire in Gaza. The Tories say he is appeasing Labour backbenchers, and Israel has accused the UK of rewarding Hamas. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, has doubled down on the Technology Secretary's criticism of Nigel Farage. Peter Kyle yesterday accused him of being on the side of people like Jimmy Savile over reforms pledged to scrap the Online Safety Act. Mr. Farage has demanded an apology, but Ms. Alexander has defended the remarks.
Logical conclusion of what he is saying at the moment is that he is happy for, you know, this type of content to be online, and for, you know, he wants to get rid of all of those offences that have been created in the Online Safety Act. Because he said that he wants to get rid of the Online Safety Act. And
four suspects have been charged with the attempted murder of a 14-year-old boy in East London. The five boys, aged between 14 and 17, are accused of attacking the teenager in East Ham on Saturday. He remains in a critical condition in hospital. Santander has confirmed it's cut more than 2,000 jobs as part of a cost-saving drive. The bank, which is in the process of buying TSB, has reported a 5% fall in half-year pre-tax profits to £764 million. And the England cricket captain, Ben Stokes, has been ruled out of the final test against India. Ollie Pope will lead the side in his absence at the Oval tomorrow because of Stokes' shoulder injury. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 91.15. That's down 21. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather this afternoon, staying mostly dry with sunny spells, but rain spreading into eastern parts of England and Scotland. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 12 is the time. That, I wish we'd done that last hour in the third hour, because I'm going to be chewing on it for the next hour when I'm trying to talk to you about something else. So much interesting stuff there. So I can't do the whole show like that. That would be, you really think so? So Keith knows a lot about this stuff. Which must make it incredibly frustrating for him to work with a dinosaur like me. So if you were to be concerned, unduly concerned, or no, duly concerned about this kind of thing, two things I should be doing in the realms of influencers are delivering the whole show straight to the camera, which feels weird to me already, and keeping the microphone a bit lower in the shot, because it's a blockage, it's a barrier between between you and me. But I make radio. I don't make content. I know radio is content, but I don't make online content. Online content, whatever you may have read recently, ceased to be something worth counting or measuring for me about 2 years after Brexit. So I don't know. And also, it looks more like when I'm looking at you, it looks more like I'm looking at the camera, but I should just move my eyes around. Anyway, if you've just tuned in at 12 o'clock, I apologise for making you think that I was having some sort of, that you were having some sort of fever dream or that I was having some sort of medical emergency. We just spent an hour talking about influencers, and I think walking the tightrope between admitting to ignorance without sounding proud of it and determining to find out more about this world in the future. 8 minutes after 12 is the time. And we stay in the realms of people who are, with the exception of Justin Imperley, or the Grumpy Gardener, as he is known to an army of TikTok admirers, we return to territory that is largely occupied by people who are younger than me. And this is a story. I approach these stories with real trepidation, because I'm never quite sure what the impact would be on somebody who is either poised or ready to take out a significant amount of debt and give up a significant portion of their life in pursuit of improving their prospects. Because, like I think anybody half decent, I think that's a really good thing. I also think that the class element of this conversation is heartbreaking. That the more middle class you are, then I think perhaps the more likely you are to prosper or thrive or whatever word you prefer, regardless of whether you go to university or not. The idea of a degree being a key that will unlock doors that would otherwise remain closed to you seems to me to be something that goes up and down in salience and accuracy according to your background, both in terms of class and in terms of family, friends and contacts, which are often, of course, exactly the same thing. It's the first time Parliament has released this data, or indeed the first time that this kind of data has been released to Parliament. And it doesn't actually break it down according to age, but that, rightly or wrongly, is the way in which my mind immediately went. 639,000 graduates are claiming benefits. The Daily Mail decides to use this as an opportunity to describe fears over the rise of, quotes, Mickey Mouse degrees, end quotes, which exist largely in the minds and the imaginations of Daily Mail commentators. It's the first time, as I say, the data has been released to Parliament, and it shows the number of people with an honours degree or similar level qualification shown to be claiming universal credit. It means about 1 in 9 claimants overall are graduates. So the way you could have done the headline would be that if you are not a graduate, you are 8 times more likely, or 9 times more likely, to end up claiming benefits. Do you see what I mean about how disingenuous it is to put Mickey Mouse in the opening paragraph? Although, then you have to break down the proportions. If you've got no qualifications whatsoever, then you're only 4 points above the people with actual degrees. I don't think that this will, as the Daily Mail wants you to believe, fuel worries that so-called Mickey Mouse degrees are seeing students leave university without the skills they need to find a job, for two reasons. Number one, it doesn't appear to be age-specific, this research. So somebody who is on universal credit because of their health and is 60 years old is going to be a part of these statistics, just as much as somebody who is 25-year-old and on universal credit because they're not earning much. But it does lead us into territory that I haven't explored with you for a while and which I want to explore with you today. It is the question of whether or not it's worth going to university. And I feel guilty asking you that question because of class. Because for people from my background or my children's background, perhaps even more pertinently, it's still not really much of a debate. There'll be a few kids who might go off to do something very, very vocational. One or two for whom academia has proved to be something of a cul-de-sac, who want to get into the workplace as quickly as possible and who want to start earning quicker than they would otherwise do. But for the massive majority of middle-class people, a degree is still de rigueur. That's quite a felicitous turn of phrase, wasn't it? A degree is still de rigueur. And that doesn't actually mean that it's worth it. It could still be the case that you come from a background where a degree is de rigueur, but you, looking back now, wish you hadn't bothered. And that is the way into this conversation that I want to adopt. My somewhat, I don't think it's patronising, but it might be out of date, and that's what I want to examine. My position on this is that getting a degree will always improve your life chances, even when it doesn't, if that makes sense. That going to university, particularly if it involves going away from home for the first and possibly only time, will always open up horizons that some people perhaps want to deny to you. Some people perhaps denied to your parents. Tony Blair came to power, promised to increase tertiary education or university access to, I think, 50% of the relevant population, 50% of the relevant age groups. And what sometimes happens in the right-wing media is you find a couple of kids who have taken out huge amounts of debt in order to go to university, and they rue the day because they haven't managed to find their dream job. When I was, and this is I think really relevant to the question of whether or not it is just an outdated view that I'm espousing. When I was 18 years old, your choice of university degree, I wonder how this will sound to influencers or listeners of a certain age. If I said to you now that when I was 18 years old and I was deciding what to do at university, for me and most of my contemporaries, it had very little to do with what we were planning to do for a living. Is that still class-based, that? So if you're coming out of a middle-class family and you might go off and do the humanities or do an arts degree, unless you've already formed a desire to be a teacher in that particular field, you're not expecting to become a historian, for example, or a philosopher or a novelist. So you do these degrees for reasons other than immediate employability. And those degrees all still exist. Law, perhaps, more vocational than anything else. Maths, enthusiasm. You might well think I'm probably going to end up being a mathematician of some kind, an accountant or a trader or something in the city. But for my generation, and I think I was representative of this, I wasn't entirely representative because I didn't really pay as much attention to things as I should have done. But when we were deciding what to do at university, we were not thinking in terms of future employability. Even at the LSE, where there were obviously plenty of people who had their sights set on careers in the city, that they were doing quite broad and quite generic economics disciplines. They weren't studying things that were very specific to certain strands or avenues that they might pursue later in the city. So, how important is it now? And that is a question I really, as you can tell, I really hesitate to ask because I don't think you'll persuade me that it doesn't always improve your chances in life. The problem is you might be listening to this thinking, well, James, it didn't improve mine. And therefore, my advice to the people coming behind me, my advice to you would be, don't bother. If you have a degree, especially if you're on universal credit, but that is by no means a prerequisite for contributing. If you have a degree and you think that you shouldn't have bothered, then give me a call. And please do the opposite as well. If I don't like this universal credit lens, but that's the angle that the story is springing from for us today. So you're on universal credit and you have a degree And you still think it was the best thing you could possibly have done at that point in your life. I don't want to sound biased. I kind of want that more than I want the other thing. I hate the idea of making content. Is that the right use of the word? I think it is. I hate the idea of making content that puts people off going to university when it obviously enhances your life chances more than not going to university. But that doesn't mean that it might also be. You look back and think that it was a complete waste of time. So, as we contemplate the knowledge that 630,000, 639,000 graduates are claiming benefits, although no one is bothered to actually explain how many of them are fully unemployed as opposed to qualifying for universal credit because of the paucity of their pay, I want to know what people in their 20s and 30s particularly now feel about degrees. Ties in a bit with the conversation in the last hour, doesn't it? If it was another Venn diagram, my generation, my class considered degrees to be de rigueur. Of course you're going to get a degree, son. Please don't be ridiculous. Yeah, unless Tottenham Hotspur sign you by tea time, you're going to university. And then on the other hand, you've got degrees are not for the likes of us, son. You don't need a degree to follow me into the trade or whatever it may be. So there's two groups of people for whom it was always absolutely accepted or always absolutely off the table. For everybody else, I really wonder what is the general mood now with regard to degrees, and do your answers to those questions change at all with the figures of 639,000 graduates being on universal credit? 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. And listen, positive answers as well. Even if your degree hasn't given you wings, it's given you things that are incredibly valuable and not relevant to this statistic about the number of graduates currently on benefits.
This is LBC.
Explore the world in a way that respects the people and places you visit with Intrepid Travel. As UK and Ireland GM Joanna Reeve explains,
our trips are all about small groups guided by amazing local leaders. So we really want you to experience the places most tourists overlook, which is great for you, but also it's really good for the communities you visit. So think about travelling out of season, look for experiences far beyond the typical tourist hotspots, avoid crowds, and visit a Greek farm for some delicious local food.
To find out more, search Intrepid Travel. We're not over tourism.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Black Mirror, Dad.
Let's watch it together tonight.
That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
One. That's Wednesday, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Unicorn Academy for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
Introducing the Ford Capri. Rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the Icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is always difficult as well not to let anecdote masquerade as data. So I don't know how we're going to navigate that. But what I want to know is whether or not people in their 20s and 30s see university degrees in the same light as people in their 40s and 50s did. And that brings us really into the political eras that we inhabited. Those of us who were in the relevant era, the relevant demographic when Tony Blair became Prime Minister versus those who are in the relevant demographic when David Cameron became Prime Minister or Boris Johnson. 21 after 12 is the time. I'm in your hands on this one. I really am. But I am conscious of putting people off something that they should actually be doing. But I'll worry about that. You just tell me your story. James is in Bermondsey. James, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, Evans. All right. So I guess basically to go to the beginning of it all. Originally, I'm from Cornwall, so not from London.
Yeah.
The job prospects there, you know, they weren't awful, not great. I worked as a boatman, so I worked fixing, cleaning boats, painting boats, okay, stuff like that.
And I got straight from school, straight from school into a boatyard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Straight from school into college and then into a boatyard.
Right.
And then, from there, basically, I thought, you know what? after 3 years of that, drinking, you know, doing all the things you would do in your teens, I decided, right, I'm going to go to uni and try it out. So, so I headed off to uni, did everything, got everything in on time. And in year two, I was applying for jobs, waiting for year three. So obviously how competitive it is. I got accepted to two of them, but unfortunately I couldn't do them because I was at uni.
Right.
And I guess kind of sort of...
In what field, James? What field were you in?
Sorry. So international politics with finance.
And what kind of jobs were you hoping to get or applying for?
I guess kind of I was hoping to get something to do with civil service, something around that. I sort of went in with a hope of doing something like that. But as you said, I didn't really have a complete set view of what I wanted to do.
Okay, but you thought that's a proper degree. It's pretty hefty and academic, and therefore it will enhance my expectations when I come out of university compared to where I was when I went in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, especially when you're from somewhere like Cornwall, you know, which is particularly marginalised in the UK today. Mm. It's one of those things where, oh, London, gleaming, come here, get a job. Unfortunately, it's the opposite way around. So, yeah.
Well, it's not quite the opposite. We're not going to prompt an influx of people to Cornwall from London in pursuit of employment. But I mean, in other words... Like Dick Whittington before you, it turned out that the pavements weren't paved with gold. That's not even fair. Yeah. You were just expecting a fair crack of the whip and essentially don't feel you've got one.
No, yeah, and at the minute I'm actually just at work. I'm basically just a self-employed tradie at the minute, doing a bit of painting here and there.
Okay. So you've got a work ethic, but what are the prospects? I mean, when did you graduate? Just this summer?
Just this summer. And
congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, but I think the important thing is it sounds like it's very recent, but lots of graduates are lining up jobs in year two of their studies and sort of hoping and praying they can do something afterwards that matches with their degree and actually give them a bit of cash.
Have you given up?
Do you know what? No, I think out of the 400 or 500 job applications I've sent, I spoke to my gran the other day. She's my rock. She said to me, don't worry about it, just keep going.
I love your gran. everyone needs someone like that in their life. It must be so dispiriting for you though, James, and it feels to an old git like me, it feels so unfair that you kind of made this leap in expectation of something that possibly wasn't there all along.
That's it. And I think to be fair though, I think the pleasure of going to uni is something that really has enhanced your life. I think what you said earlier about it being not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I mean, the job thing's not great, but my university, I went to City University of London and it was brilliant. And like, I had the best time there. And I really enjoyed kind of the lectures. I learned a lot. I went in there as a right-wing sort of liberal, and I came out sort of a central kind of socialist perspective, especially now.
Yeah, and that is, of course, why some people on the right will be delighted and use phrases like Mickey Mouse degree, and will be delighted at the thought of you not going to university, a younger version of you not going to university. And it's why I get so almost dewy-eyed when I feel bad about the possibility of dissuading people from doing what you've done, because it will have enhanced your life in so many ways, if not, at this point, your professional expectations.
Yeah, well, it's definitely made me a better person to talk to, that's for sure.
I can tell that. Well, I never spoke to you before, but, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, you've got to just do what your gran said, haven't you? You've just got to hang in there and hope for the best and keep pushing. And, you know, I've been a degree in international politics and finance and an interest in... what else, apart from the civil service, what else are you interested in?
Well, I've been looking at auditing. Obviously, I'm going to go probably to try and get a master's for that. But mainly, my girlfriend's German, so we're probably going to move to Germany, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see why. And, of course, we've also done you a huge solid by voting to abolish freedom of movement a few years ago, but I'm sure you can get over that obstacle. If you like the sound of James, then do get in touch, and you work in any of those fields, then do get in touch and we'll pass on details. But that German point there also ties with another story in the news today about... it's come from the Adam Smith Institute, which is another of those grandly named organisations that is opaquely funded and mysteriously committed to portraying the country in the worst imaginable light under Labour, while pretending that things like... I presume it was pro-Brexit. My apologies if it wasn't. But they've undertaken some research which, even by the standards of so-called think tanks, is absolutely hilarious. More than half of young people have considered leaving Britain under Labour, a think tank has found. Adults between 18 and 30 years old said they had serious concerns about housing, personal finances and their future in the UK. Under Labour, the Daily Telegraph reports. So apparently in the last 12 months, people have begun to feel overtaxed, underhoused and undervalued in ways that they never did before. So much so that 28% of young Britons are either actively planning, that would be 8%, or have seriously considered emigrating. So here is a wonderful way to conduct research. Find a bunch of young people and say to them, would you like to live in Goa? Or would you like to live in Francis Ford Coppola's retreat in Belize in the middle of the jungle? And if enough of them reply yes, would you like £1 million? Yes, please. Would you like to live somewhere really hot and nice? Yes, I would, actually. 89% of young people want to flee Britain, Labour's Britain, as all of the things that the Tories created continue to bite. It's extraordinary that this stuff gets commissioned. It's extraordinary that it gets published, and it's extraordinary that it doesn't get torn apart more regularly and more violently than it does on this programme, because it betrays the young people. Rather than talking about why the country has been reduced to what it currently is after 14 years of austerity, they instead pretend that it's a reaction to something that Labour has done. Shall I squeeze in Kiana? Yes, I will. Kiana's in Basingstoke. Kiana, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello.
Must admit, I listen to you every day, but today is the first time I've been inspired to actually call myself.
Well, that means I've not been hitting my marks previously, Kiana. I should be inspiring you to ring in on at least two occasions a month. I'll do better in future. What do you want to say?
I think that the narrative that people should be pushed to go to university straight after college is where the country goes wrong. Mm. So me, myself, I had some recruitment experience after college, and I also worked for another small company after that. During lockdown, I decided to take a think about what it was I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah.
And figured out essentially the salary I'd like to be on and the careers that match my personality type. And then worked out that project management was the way forward for me. So decided to do my business management degree. At the time, I was working full-time and studied full-time in my first year because it was still in lockdown at the time.
Oh, okay.
At the end of my first year, I found out that I was pregnant, so I took a gap year off to give birth and raise her for a year, and then decided to continue with my degree because I wasn't just pushing for myself now, I was pushing for my little one as well. I managed to graduate last year with a first-class honours, and now I work as a project manager, but I still get help through Universal Credit because obviously I've got my little one as well.
How amazing. So 28-year-old, single parent, got herself through university, got the job that she wanted when she decided to go to university, and still qualifies for Universal Credit because of the child status in your household. You would be part of these statistics. So you're being used today by Neil O'Brien, the Conservative MP, to discourage people from going to university.
I just think it's not about, I don't think they should be discouraging people to go to university. I think, like you said earlier, a lot of people go to university, spend tons of money now, and do it in a degree that they will never use.
Mm.
They need that life experience before choosing to invest in themselves so vastly before making that step.
Yeah, I mean, two things are true at the same time. I kind of agree with you in the sense that it can feel a little bit like limbo. If you grew up on a conveyor belt like mine, and this is where class comes back into it, it is just presumed that after school you maybe take a gap year and go sailing around the Caribbean or whatever it is they do, or you crack on straight away with the university. Your way is much wiser. Having a look around and having a think and working out how the world works. But people are in a hurry. Why weren't you in more of a hurry, do you think?
I think it's because, one, my mum never pushed me. I think I was the first person actually in my family that went to university and probably finished the degree as well. My mum, she's got her own hair salon and she's a business owner, so it's just a different world that she grew up in. But equally on my dad's side of the family, they were university goers and majority of them are accountants. So I knew that was something I never wanted to do. I just knew that I had to work hard for the type of life that I wanted for myself. and that's
what
I did.
This is brilliant. And this is exactly what the Conservative Party would once have encouraged. And yet, of course, they are using the fact that someone like you can be on universal credit at the age of 28 as a deterrent to people going down the path that you went, with the caveat, of course, that you think people should postpone going down that path until a little later than is traditional. Phone lines are open. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. How do we walk this tightrope in a way between James and Kiana? James, no regrets at all about going to university in many ways, but currently somewhat pessimistic about the likelihood of it transforming his fortunes professionally. Kiana, very different route, absolute poster girl for doing it and encouraging everybody else to do it as well. How much has changed since I graduated 30 years ago? How much has actually changed in the context of what a degree is worth and whether it's worth doing? And how much of your answer to that question is contingent upon the debt that you now shoulder that we didn't? Dominic Ellis is here now with your headlines.
Tsunami waves have started to hit parts of the US after a huge earthquake off eastern Russia. Nearly 2 million people in Japan have been ordered to leave their homes. Ministers have rejected claims that Britain is rewarding Hamas by moving toward recognising a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer's promised the UK will do that by September, unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. And two British boys have died after getting into difficulty in the sea in Spain. Officials say the brothers, aged 11 and 13, had been swimming at a beach in Tarragona yesterday. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells today. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees.
LBC. Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
You could be a lotto millionaire like Terry. Get your ticket for tonight's draw. The National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers. Where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one. Where every little thing you do makes a big difference. Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Any tips for the racing?
Yeah, your best bet is to head to BetVictor for their new customer welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they give you £20 in free bets on the horse racing. But here's another tip. If you're at the races, head to the paddock. You get lots of info they don't put in the race cards.
Like what?
Like the fact I'm seeing one of them drop a lot of weight right now.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the racing at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in, bet on horse racing at odds of evens or greater, no cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply, gambleaware.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker, just say, play LBC.
12:35 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, the reason I ask whether or not anything has actually changed that much with the introduction of tuition fees and much bigger debt being placed on the shoulders of young people is partly because of messages like this. Hello, James. I came from unemployed parents. I graduated from Cambridge in maths, then went back to a life of unemployment before taking a call centre job, then temporary work. This destroyed my confidence, and 23 years later, I'm still trying to pay off my student debts. I would advise that you go to university only if you can get some work experience alongside the education. Otherwise, disappointment awaits. I wonder how much of that is to do with class, respectfully. I wonder whether or not, if your parents or your family don't speak the language that you need to speak, I don't mean geographical language, I mean the language of whatever the word I want is, advancement, achievement, aspiration, you get to graduation day, and it's like an umbilical is cut. All right, you're on your own. Whether the college could have done more, but if you're doing maths at Cambridge, I'd have thought you'd have been highly employable in some sectors. It's just a question of whether or not you knew how to knock on those doors. And if you didn't, that's not your fault. But I completely understand how it could knock your confidence. Indeed, sap it completely. 12:37 is the time. Johnny's in Horsham. Johnny, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a multifaceted thing, really.
It is
very much...
What is life?
Very much life, actually. I just on that, we've spoken before. I'm the guy who gave the saying of it's not the water inside the boat that makes it sink, it's the water that gets inside it. But I run men's circles. I've got 44 ex-addicts and 17 suicide attempts because of the lifestyle of young people. And it is a class issue, but one of the problems we get is university is a business now. People are being sold to, and they're sold a dream that go to university and everything will be fantastic. A question I think you should ask is not how many have got degrees and are on universal credit. Yeah. How many people have got degrees and are working at KFC or doing jobs that have nothing to do with the degree that they've paid for? Because you can do a degree in zombie apocalypse studies, you can do a degree in parapsychology, you can do a degree in gothic studies. And university's become a business now, right? And people are told that you can get a degree and it'll be the doorway to anything. And there's too many people leaving.
Are they?
With 53... Yeah, well, yeah, there's...
Because I haven't... I mean, how old are you?
I'm 55, but the point I was going to make...
Finished. Because, I mean, you're the bloke telling me that. And yeah. And none of the people in their 20s have told me that.
But
so
I,
far.
I
and
an anecdote, every day.
Anecdote is not data. So you're dealing with young people who've been sold an unachievable promise.
No, it's not unachievable. But there is a class preference behind it as well. But the problem is, when I was younger, you would go to Polytechnic. And if you wanted to go to university, it's because you are now at the sharp end of the spear, have a career path, and you really want to specialise in that. It's not studying Harry. You can do a degree in Harry Potter, and you will still have £53,000 of debt after studying a degree in Harry Potter. But Hogwarts isn't real, right?
How many people do you think have done degrees in Harry Potter?
But that's the other end of the severe.
I don't think you can have it both ways, can you? I mean, if you've signed up to do a degree, well, hang on, you don't know what I've said yet. Signed up to do a degree in Harry Potter, which I don't think exists, but...
No, it does.
Well, I've just looked it up. I cheated. You might be able to do a module using the works of J.K. Rowling to examine prejudice, citizenship and bullying in modern society, but that's not quite what you had in mind, is it?
I'm
missing the point to a degree. Okay, so the degree in Harry Potter studies doesn't exist, and the module you're referring to looks at prejudice, citizenship and bullying in modern society through the works of J.K. Rowling, which sounds to me like a very good thing to study.
Don't
care what the underpinning point is, we just need to work on what you've actually said, and there may be some degrees that don't have, there must be millions of degrees, or thousands.
This is like talking to
me. You've got to let me finish my point before you jump. You can't start dismantling what I say until you know what it is. So you're wrong about Harry Potter degrees, you're probably wrong about zombie apocalypse studies, but you're trying to make a point that some people are promised things that are unachievable. If you're signing up for a degree like that, Johnny, let's pretend that they even exist, what is the promise you're being made, do you think? What is the job that mythical undergraduate is expecting to achieve on graduation?
The youth of today, you can look up, you can do a degree on surfing. I'm from Cornwall.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you the question again. If they're signing up for the degrees that you're talking about, what are the promises they're being made? If, for example, there was a degree in Harry Potter studies, spoiler alert, there isn't, what would the mythical undergrad... They don't think they're going to become stockbrokers or work for Goldman Sachs, do they? They don't think they're going to... So what are the jobs they think they're being sold? Try not to use the phrase the youth of today, if you can.
No, I'll explain.
And talk to me about these people who don't exist, but what they would actually be promised if they did exist.
They are promised a lifestyle of fun and adventure. And if you look at the campaigns
They're promised a nice time at university. They're not promised anything beyond that if they're signing up for a non-existent degree in Harry Potter studies, mate.
There is the degree on surfing. You can look at it, surf studies. In Falmouth, there is a degree on it.
Okay, and what do you think they're being promised? What are they being promised?
They're being promised a degree, basically. And
yeah, but what's the lifestyle? What's the dream that they're not going to achieve that is a consequence of doing so? And how many of the people you deal with did a degree in surf studies at Falmouth?
Well, that's academic, isn't it?
Because because you're using them as proof of your point, and none of them actually fit the criteria that you're describing or using.
How many people have done degrees that aren't doing the career in the degree that they've done?
Well, me.
And you've posed the question yourself. How many people have done...
Well, some people would disagree with that. They think that this is philosophy. But I would disagree. How many people doing history? How many people doing English? Lots of people doing really helpful, useful... I mean, even that J.K. Rowling thing that I'd never heard of before sounds like a really fruitful and illuminating line of inquiry.
You're making my point. Because the point is... There's so many courses out there for so many people that make industry so much money.
Yeah.
There's so much of it.
Yeah, but the question of whether or not those 3 years you spent at university were fruitful or not, and again, I'm sure that I'm proving your point, is not the same as whether or not those 3 years at university enhanced your employability. And the question was whether or not the debt changes the... relationship between expectation and you know, the only lad we've spoken to this hour who is in precisely the catchment area that I'm talking about and you're speculating about is the lad who isn't currently on the ladder he hoped to be on, but who considers going to university in London for 3 years to be the best possible thing he could have done since he left Cornwall. But hey ho, I mean zombie apocalypses. Becky's in Bexhill. Becky, what would you like to say?
James, hello. I spoke to you about 10 years ago.
You're not expecting me to remember, Becky.
Well, I think you might.
Go on.
I think you might do.
Go on.
My son had just started an apprenticeship. He'd done his A-levels. He wasn't intent on going to university, and I wasn't that keen either. The tuition fees had just gone up.
Yes.
And he got an apprenticeship with RBS, Royal Bank of Scotland.
That rings a bell, actually.
I'm not sure I actually said who he had his apprenticeship with.
But in banking, because I didn't know it existed at the time. I didn't know that it was an alternative to a degree.
Yes. And at the end of the call, this is the bit you might remember, you said, but who irons his shirts? And I said, I do. And you said, there you go. He hasn't learnt how to iron shirts at university.
That sounds highly unlikely. Anyway. That sounds like a very shallow point scoring exercise from a very unprofessional and amateurish presenter. Are you sure it was me?
Absolutely.
Oh.
I just wanted to update you. So he's now 30. He ended up doing a degree with RBS that became NatWest.
Okay.
And he was up in the city. He was at Bishopsgate. He did all the apprentices on his cohort were all given the opportunity to do a degree in banking and finance, which he did, and he studied part time and took him 4 years, but he got a first in banking and finance. But that ironically was not related to the job he was doing at NatWest. He became a project manager with NatWest. Anyway, he was with them 8-9 years, and he met an Australian girl, and he actually now lives in Australia, lives in Brisbane. He is a project manager for a bank in Australia and doing very, very well.
So it's all worked out very nicely.
It's worked out really nicely, but I've got two other children as well, who neither of whom went to university as well, because they were both police cadets, and they now... My son is a police officer in the Met, and my daughter is police staff in the Met.
If there's a lesson here, and I think there is, it is to and to tie in what you said with Kiana, who did go down the degree route, but a little later, and to contrast it with what I always describe as a conveyor belt that is often quite middle class in construct, is weigh up all your options before you make these big decisions at this time
Definitely.
In your life. If you're lucky enough to have a mum like you or a brilliant teacher at school, have a look at absolutely everything that is available
absolutely.
To you, because it may
absolutely.
Turn out, for example, that doing surf studies at Falmouth, where you would learn oceanography, business management, you'd be set up for life as an instructor who could tour the world, and you'd have a prioritisation of protecting your ecosystem. You may never have thought of that, but with the right advice, it could turn out to be something that was incredibly valuable and useful.
Yes.
I love that. I have one more question.
Yeah, go on.
Who irons his shirts?
Well, he's now father himself. His son, his little boy is now one today, actually.
Oh, how lovely.
And I'm pretty certain he does. Well, I think it got to the, what you said must
they
have...
They don't wear shirts with collars in Australia, well, do they? They all walk around
in
vests.
Well, I know. I think it must have eaten away at me, because when he got to about 20 or 21 and I was ironing his shirts every Sunday night, yeah, I thought, what am I doing?
Exactly, I got there in the end.
He'd rock up at sort of 9 o'clock at night on a Sunday, and the shirts would all be lined up. And I said, look, I'm not doing this anymore. You're going to have to... So he then had to come in a little bit earlier on a Sunday to do his shirt.
What point did I think I was proving 10 years ago?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's not the answer I was expecting, but I think it works better than any that I was.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Shame on you. Released British-Israeli hostage Emily Damari's message to Keir Starmer. Her lawyer speaks to LBC later.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep, we're that family now.
Josh, flip us off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Paddy, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been. When you discover hidden gems and amazing sights. When you just can't wait to pack your bags.
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
At SSE Energy Solutions, we know businesses are full of different kinds of energy.
Like your fourth coffee of the morning energy.
Your yes, chef energy. And even as per my last email energy. You can bring any energy you like to your business. But at SSE Energy Solutions, we bring simple, affordable energy. Choose SSE Energy Solutions. A different kind of energy.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Feel the thunder of hooves. The tension as they race past. Your heart in your chest. That split second of silence. Before the roar of the finish. That glorious Goodwood feeling. Qatar Goodwood Festival, presented by Visit Qatar. July 29th to August 2nd. Book now.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It's 10 to 1. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Jimmy reminds us, James, he writes, your era had no tuition fees, degrees had greater meaning, and there was more social mobility. All that has gone. Except that, without a degree, I'd say you were still going to be even less socially mobile than you would be with one. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Claire's been back in touch. So, James, we spoke in the first hour. I told you I have a law degree, but I didn't tell you that I am also on universal credit due to health problems. It didn't end up benefiting me, the degree, so I can agree with that bit of the conversation, but I'm still so glad I went to university. It totally opened up my brain to being able to think critically, to do intense research and to challenge myself in ways I'd never have expected. I think that's where my political approach to this story comes from. But it's quite a smug position to be in. Smug's not quite the right word, but maybe it is. It's the idea that it would be to everybody's benefit to have their critical thinking skills enhanced, to be exposed to things that they may not previously have been exposed to, regardless of your class. and not just academically, but also socially, to meet people that you wouldn't have met otherwise, and to just get an idea of what the world outside your window, or what the world outside other people's windows is like. And university can be a wonderful thing for that. But I suppose the downside of that is it's where perhaps it's smug is Jimmy's point, that it's easy to say that if you're our age or my age. It's a very different proposition for young people contemplating university now. And I should offer an apology to Australia as well while I'm here. Maria is in Coolangatta in Queensland, and she said, shame on you, James, Australians are very well-dressed. It was a lazy stereotyping. Fiona is in Arrington in Cambridgeshire. Fiona, what made you pick up the phone?
I picked up the phone because you were saying about what's it like then and what's it like now.
Yes.
And I think I can tell you a little bit about what it is like, because I went to university in the 1990s and I'm back at university now as a student. But in between, I've been a university lecturer as well.
Gosh.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a weird trajectory.
Well, it certainly qualifies you. I don't know what else it's going to qualify you for, but it certainly qualifies you for contributing to this conversation.
So, yeah, what I see with people saying about Mickey Mouse degrees, it really bugs me, because as somebody who has been a lecturer and has written these things for courses and outlines for courses and what the courses are supposed to achieve and when you have to market the course,
and
part of the success of the course is the employability component, is also how many students, you know, will be employed
I mean, to be fair, it's a phrase that appears in the Daily Mail coverage, but we've poo-pooed it pretty comprehensively. And I appreciate, I think one caller has sort of resurrected these ghosts of non-existent degrees.
Yeah.
But the reason I hate it, probably like you, is because there's young people somewhere who've got a much better understanding of what that degree actually involves, working bloody hard to enhance their life prospects, and they're being mocked and insulted by right-wing journalists who haven't got the first idea what they're actually writing about.
What I see is the difference between back in 1996 when I did my degree, and now I'm back at university as a postgraduate student doing a master's in a different topic, and I've seen this as a lecturer as well, when I had students come to me. The pressure is so much
on them.
Higher on them.
Yes.
And it's not just about the pressure of achieving, because the stakes are high to achieve, because I think the competition these days is much tougher than it used to be back in the 1990s when I was a student. So to get to the top, to get to where you want to be, the competition is gone up a notch. Also, they're carrying a huge amount of debt. My master's is a 2-year course. By the time I finished, it will have cost me over £24,000. And that's a heck of a lot of money. And so I feel the financial burden of that. But if you're doing a degree and your tuition fees are £8,500 a year, plus the, you know, living expenses. And it's not, university isn't just about the academia.
No.
It's about being able to live as well. And I see their very real pressures of them wanting to study, but their brain is partitioned because they have to think about real life and work and keeping a roof over their head and their bills.
And we wonder why we're facing so many problems in this generation, these generations, than ours did.
That is far more real for them and far more of a bigger pressure to them. And certainly it was a pressure for me as a student, but it's so, with that added debt, it is so much of a burden, mental burden that they're carrying.
And does that change the relationship with aspiration, do you think? The heft of the burden, the weight of the burden means that you do expect more in return by way of expectation or fortunes?
You expect more from the university, certainly. Yeah. The one thing that the universities never fail to do is to bill you on time for your next module. That is done with, you know, the kind of efficiency which is run like clockwork. But when it comes to course, materials and modules appearing on time, marks coming out on time, being able to get the time of, say, your lecturers so that you can get feedback and that's appropriate and timely, the lecturing staff are spread very thin.
It's a different proposition entirely. Well, it's two different things, isn't it? The people running the money and the people running the courses are going to be, they'll probably never even meet each other. But it ties in a little bit with what Johnny, I think, was trying to say about businesses. They've always been businesses, but it's possible that the focus has shifted. What would you say to 1996-year-old Fiona from the eerie of 2025 when she said, do you think I should do a degree? What would you say?
Well, I wasn't even supposed to go to university because I did a vocational qualification, but I rebelled and went to university.
So you'd say yes?
I would say yes because it opened my life into something. So I was, you know, the job
That's
that
the
I
problem,
would have gone
it?
Into doing and the job that I ended up doing has so much more life enriching. It's been a crazy ride. It's been fantastic.
This sounds like a thank you speech at an award ceremony. You're going to have another massive kick on with your masters imminently, Fiona. I'm certain of it. I like this also from Nick. James, at the School of Hard Knocks, you can start studying Harry Potter, then finish off at the University of Life. Just more cliches in one message than I think any of us have managed in a long time. I have the 9 parties from which the 255 MPs sent a letter to the Prime Minister about recognising Palestine last week were culled, and it took a very long time to get all 9, and there's a chance we haven't got it completely correct. Labour, obviously, Conservatives, obviously, Lib Dems, SNP, Plaid, Greens, Independents, we're filing that as a party, SDLP, that's the Northern Irish one, and the Alliance Party as well. So that we think that's the 9, but staying on that theme, there is of course one party missing, and I'll leave you with another little mystery by way of homework, is there is only one party leader currently in Parliament who, despite having an extremely expensive secondary education, didn't actually have a degree. I wonder if you can work out who that is. That's it from me for another day. The time is approaching 1 o'clock. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player and indeed on the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. So download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. I very much enjoyed that hour. It was a good one.
What's wrong with the other two?
Yeah, they were terrible. God, I wouldn't bother if I were you. At 3 today, a third of UK teenagers who vape will go on to start smoking tobacco, according to the latest research. It means they're as likely to smoke as their peers were in the 1970s. Have we messed up on this one? At 2, knife crimes going up and up in London with a cluster of West End streets, the worst areas for it. Should we conclude the public health approach isn't working? But I start our discussions today with that Starmer announcement just seconds after I came off air yesterday about recognising a Palestinian state. We'll hear from the lawyer of the British Israeli hostage, Emily Damari, later. She is not impressed.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, waves generated by a tsunami have started to hit California and other parts of the US. It was triggered by a huge 8.8 magnitude earthquake off eastern Russia. Nearly 2 million people in Japan have been ordered to leave their homes. Professor David Tapin is from the British Geological Survey and says it's the best prepared country for tsunamis.
The warning would have been given and people would be evacuated, and there is a possibility of what we call aftershocks. But the warning system's in operation. I'm looking at my feeds, people reacting, and that's very, very good news.
Ministers have rejected claims they're engaging in gesture politics by moving to recognise a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer has promised to take that step by September unless Israel commits to a ceasefire in Gaza. Israel's Prime Minister has accused the UK of rewarding terrorists, but Chair of the Commons Foreign Affairs Committee, Dame Emily Thornberry, refutes that.
Whenever there is any sort of conflict, if there is to be peace at the end of it, you could say this is rewarding the people who've been involved in the conflict. What's the alternative? Everyone has said Hamas has no future in Gaza. So nobody's rewarding Hamas. Hamas is off. Hamas is out.
Officials in Spain say two British boys have died after getting into difficulty in the sea. The brothers, aged 11 and 13, had been swimming on a beach in the northeastern city of Tarragona. The Foreign Office says it is supporting the boys' family. The Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, says his office is determined to build on its progress in cutting violent crime. That's despite new figures suggesting knife crime in the capital has increased by nearly 60% in 3 years. A report by the Policy Exchange think tank also says only 1 in 20 robberies in London were solved last year. Fans are lining the streets of Birmingham city centre to pay their final respects to Ozzy Osbourne. A procession is taking place this afternoon along Broad Street ahead of a private funeral. The Black Sabbath frontman died last week at the age of 76. And Sainsbury's says it is working to resolve an issue with Visa, which is reportedly impacting customers' ability to pay for online shops. The supermarket has ruled out a cyber attack, saying its website and app are still functioning normally. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 29 at 91.06. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells this afternoon. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Now, just after I left you yesterday at 4 o'clock, there was that important statement from Keir Starmer about Britain preparing, essentially, to recognise a Palestinian state. There were a couple of ifs and buts and maybes ahead of it, which we can discuss as well this hour, but that happened just after I'd left you. But I want to talk about it this hour. Interesting to hear Emily Thornberry, Dame Emily Thornberry, Chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, saying in that little clip you heard in the news there, Hamas is off, Hamas is out. I know she wishes that were the case. I wish that were the case. But it isn't the case yet. Hamas is off, Hamas is out. Tell that to the Israeli soldiers who are being killed by them every day. Tell that to their families. Tell that to the hostages that Hamas is still holding. Tell that to the Gazans who are being kneecapped for trying to get food for their families. And I know there is an Israeli side to that particular story as well when it comes to aid. Also going to discuss that and hear from Jonathan Friedland, the Guardian journalist, on it this hour. Not ignoring that either. But I think it's too simplistic for Labour, the Labour government, I should say, to say Hamas is off, Hamas is out, and give Israel a sort of a conditional ultimatum, or else we will wield a stick at you called a Palestinian state. I don't think that's fair on Israel, and I don't think it's fair on Palestinians. A Palestinian state, which I hope is recognised and functional and peaceable one day, I hope that happens. We have to hope that happens for the sake of both the Palestinians and the Israelis. But it's certainly not happening at the moment. And it's certainly not the state that currently governs in Gaza, is it? Hamas is. And they can't be wished away, would be my response to that. Hamas is off, Hamas is out. If only they could be wished away. And if only some of the worst excesses of the Israeli government could be wished away, but they can't be, and they certainly won't be, just by Britain recognising a Palestinian state. But we'll dig down into that in our own conversations together in a few minutes. Let's listen to something that Dame Emily Thornberry said to me on Friday, following France's announcement of no conditions on this one, just recognising a Palestinian state.
I think it's about time that we recognise Palestine. My concern is that whilst we continue to wait for the perfect time, the West Bank is largely being annexed and there is complete chaos in Gaza and East Jerusalem is being absorbed. So everywhere that we thought was going to be Palestine, we're losing and we're watching it go. I think that we should recognise Palestine as the beginning of a process whereby we say we're back in the room. We now want to try to find a solution for this. The only serious and sensible solution that anyone has ever come up with is a two-state solution. So we must work for that.
Leila Malana Allen joins me, special correspondent for PBS NewsHour. Let's start with your assessment of both the announcement from Starmer yesterday and the reaction to it almost 24 hours later.
Well, look, this has clearly come from an immense amount of pressure being put on Keir Starmer, right? He certainly has not taken a kind of forward leading position throughout the war, really. It's all been very reactive. There's been a lot of frustration that he hasn't sort of been leading on this. And we've seen other world leaders try and do so, of course, extensively, the Emir of Qatar and in Egypt. And they, of course, have been so heavily involved. Emmanuel Macron has come forward very much so in the last few months and really tried to get involved there, leading along with, you know, MBS and Saudi Arabia. So it's certainly a little quite late. And the way he's phrased it is not ideal. Because, of course, as his own MPs immediately on the Foreign Affairs Committee came back and said, statehood is not conditional. It's an inalienable right, as you have said yourself, Mr. Starmer, and you can't put conditions on an inalienable right. So trying to phrase it, I understand what he's doing. He's trying to suggest that the reason for doing this is not to try and lash out at Israel or Israelis in any way, but is to try and move forward to a peaceful solution, and that, you know, a ceasefire is incredibly urgent, and even more so now that we're in this starvation situation in Gaza. But the way it's coming across is as though it's sort of a manipulative tactic, carrot and stick, which isn't helpful to anybody and doesn't make him look great as a statesman.
And is it fair to say that although the message to Hamas, and it was, I would argue, couched a little in that announcement, but it was certainly said, let's try to be fair, it was said, Hamas must agree a ceasefire, they must release hostages, they will have no role in government, and they need to fully disarm. So those were the conditions, I suppose, for Hamas, over whom we have zero control at all. I mean, arguably, we have zero control over Israel either, but there you have it. The conditions on Israel were agree a ceasefire. Well, they just did, didn't they? And Hamas walked away from it. Allow the UN to restart supplies of aid. They just have. Commit to a two-state solution. They've tried that multiple times. And let's hope that they can try again. Guarantee the West Bank not annexed. I mean, that, I think, is a strong call.